passive-aggressive fashion. In fact, sometimes in quite an aggressive fashion that I get asked rather more than you might imagine. And the question is, why on earth are you talking about anything else other than this? The problem, of course, with that question is that it speaks directly to people's personal interests, prejudices, obsessions, priorities. Why on earth are you talking about this thing when what I think is really important is missing entirely from your agenda? But today and yesterday and the day before, and although we weren't here, arguably the day before that, there is only one thing we should be talking about, and it remains the potential military invasion of Europe by the United States of America.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, talks between US and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv are expected to resume in Paris today. British and French troops have been promised to help defend Ukraine from future attack if a peace deal with Russia is agreed. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to be questioned by MPs about the details at Prime Minister's questions this lunchtime. Former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO, General Sir Richard Shirriff, has spoken to LBC.
This statement yesterday from the from Paris is pretty light on detail, but the bottom line is also this can't be a lightly armed blueberry type peacekeeper. UN style. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace, and enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
The Trump administration has suggested the US military could be deployed to take over Greenland. President Trump sees the semi-autonomous Danish territory as a national security priority. European leaders have joined Denmark in saying that Greenland belongs to its people. Learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months before sitting their theory and practical tests. The proposals are part of the government's new road safety strategy. The plans will be subject to consultation. Submerged, the government is spending £4 million a year on a prison that it can't use. HMP Dartmoor hasn't been able to hold inmates since August 2024, after abnormal levels of a radioactive gas were detected. The Public Accounts Committee says ministers could be locked into a contract for the jail for another 8 years. The Ministry of Justice says it inherited a prisons crisis. Hundreds of schools are closed for a third day in Scotland, where a yellow warning for snow covers large parts of the country. Aberdeenshire has also declared a major incident because of heavy snowfall, while a cold health alert's been extended to all regions of England until Sunday. Meteorologist Claire Nasir has told LBC that Storm Goretti will bring further disruption tomorrow.
We've seen about 0.5 metre of snow across the northeast of Scotland over the last few days. More snow to come today. Some communities have been cut off. But we look to the southwest, where an area of low pressure will deepen and strengthen through Thursday afternoon, bringing wet and windy weather, severe gales. Now, as this area of low pressure skirts along the south coast, bringing those very damaging winds, as the rain spews northwards and counters the cold air, it's likely to turn to snow.
In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 at 10,070. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Snow showers continuing for the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after ten, and it goes against my instincts, you know. It goes against my better instincts. And yet, the times when we've done it, which are fairly rare, has been indubitably, absolutely the correct thing to do. When we find ourselves circling back to very similar territory to the territory that we've already explored the previous day or the day before that. I mean, there were times, weren't there, during Brexit, and I suppose most obviously during COVID, where it felt as if there was only really one story in town, one thing worthy of our attention. But I'm just going to run something by you, if I may. And it literally occurred to me 5.5 minutes ago, while I was in the production office, just chewing the fat. And it literally occurred to me in that moment that we've entered, well, no, maybe we haven't, but we could enter the don't look up phase. I don't know if you remember the call yesterday, I don't know if you were listening, where to a caller who brought the five stages of grief into the conversation, of which, of course, denial is a crucial part, and it is still there, a denial of the gravity of the situation that we're currently facing, as Donald Trump essentially leads America out of the post-world order. It's impossible to exaggerate the significance and the importance of this moment, if, as seems almost certain, the traffic continues to move in that direction. And it's such an enormous thing to contemplate that there is a temptation not to look up. That's a reference, if you don't know, to a Leonardo DiCaprio film, which is an allegory for climate change and posits the notion of a comet, a meteorite heading towards the Earth that will destroy humanity. And the evidence of its imminent arrival is pretty much uncontestable, and yet humanity elects, or significant ways, enough of humanity elects to just ignore it and carry on as normal until the moment of a potential impact. No spoilers here. And you can see why it's a beautiful psychological exercise. I got a little bit obsessed with it a couple of years ago, because it was the big hit over Christmas, wasn't it? And it works so perfectly in the context of climate change. But there's a lack of immediacy to climate change that just slightly weakened the allegory. You know, you can see a comet, you can see a meteorite on a screen heading towards you, and you know that it's going to blow your species to smithereens. Would it really kick in psychologically in the same way that imminent climate catastrophe kicks in? I don't know, but it was a powerful and a rather brilliant rhetorical exercise. And where does the Trump story sit between those two poles? So you've got imminent catastrophe that is too complicated, too difficult, and arguably too far off to focus our attention as it should. And that's in the real world. And then you've got the fictional imminent catastrophe of the meteorite hitting the Earth. And somehow we persuade ourselves that that's too big to worry about. It's not complicated, it's not difficult, and it's not far off. But we can still psychologically look the other way. We can still psychologically look down, not look up, pretend that it's not happening. And I don't know where this story fits into that scale. It's been an incredible 3 days, 2.5 days, where, I mean, you've gone, remember, it was only on Monday that people were telling us that Donald Trump is brilliant and the invasion of Venezuela or the annexation of Venezuela is wonderful and you shouldn't worry about international law and ha ha ha, I love him because he upsets all the right people. Admittedly, there aren't many people doing that anymore. Even some of the most knuckle-headed professional commentators and politicians appear to recognize, or to be able finally to read some of the writing on the wall. But it was still going on. If you've got your sort of pro-Trump scarf knotted so tightly around your neck that it's cut off the flow of all, oxygen to your brain, all blood to your brain, then you kind of have to stay on this. You have to stay on this tip of, oh, isn't Trump wonderful? You can't get off it. But anybody vaguely cognizant and anybody vaguely conscious intellectually is now aware of the fact that this is different. And the main proof of the difference is not in Venezuela, of course. It's in the words that are coming out with regard to Greenland. Although Venezuela's pretty helpful too. Two or three elements of the Venezuela story that I think should be a little bit more prominent would include the fact that if the rationale for getting rid of Maduro was that his regime was so toxic, why on earth have they replaced him with his deputy? Number two, the living conditions and the daily experience of the average Venezuelan has got worse since Maduro went. Number three, the sort of de facto leader of the opposition position has been talked about with borderline contempt by Donald Trump and doesn't seem likely to be installed anytime soon, which means the argument about being an upholder or a defender of democracy was absolute toot. Number four, the former president of Honduras, of course, was pardoned while serving a 45-year sentence for trafficking cocaine, which makes a mockery of the claim that it was done in order to punish Maduro for being involved in the trafficking of cocaine. That's just four things. I could go on. So even Venezuela, by Wednesday morning, is none of the things that the supporters or the admirers or the cheerleaders for Donald Trump were saying that it was. I mean, that's extraordinary. 2.5 days in which even the people sort of tragically glued to support for Donald Trump, largely, as we know, because he's kind of greenlit racism in a way that very few world leaders have done since the end of the Second World War. And that's such a powerful drug for Daily Mail columnists and right-wing politicians that they can't quite turn off the love of the fact that they're allowed to be racist again for long enough to turn on the fact that he appears to be trashing not only international law, but from a European perspective, the post-war settlement, the post-1945, certainly post-1949 settlement. I mean, how would you sell it if we had left-wing media? Not even left-wing. If we had honest, vaguely liberal Democrat media in this country with the same power and the same tactics as the right-wing media that brought us admiration for Donald Trump, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, Brexit, what would it look like? It would be something like Donald Trump dances on Winston Churchill's grave as he sets fire to the NATO settlement. Donald Trump insults our war dead as he undoes the peace that was established through blood and toil during the first half of the 1940s. If you had that kind of tactic, that kind of rhetoric being deployed by people on the right side of history, on the side of decency, democracy, accountability, rules-based institutions, the law, even Margaret Thatcher, of course, that magnificent quote yesterday about why you can't just pick your support for laws or lawbreakers according to the ones that you like and you don't like. In the absence of objectivity, there is nothing. Nothing is left but anarchy. That's what Donald Trump is doing. I mean, it's so Orwellian, you almost wish you'd never used the word Orwellian before, because it never quite fitted as well as this does. What is it? Oceania, East Asia, what's the other one? Three massive powers on the planet of Big Brother on 1984. Three massive powers in a state of perpetual war and undiluted propaganda. And who knew that that was the world that the President of the United States dreamt of? And that is roughly where we are. Roughly where we are. Oceania, Eurasia, East Asia. The three massive fortresses of untrammeled, unaccountable power presided over by variations of Big Brother while the population just lives in a form of a combination of torpor and sycophancy. And that is what is happening. We are... Is it runway one? What does the United Kingdom become? Well, potentially, because if he goes into Greenland, where does he go next? Anyway, right, let's wind it back in again. Let's wind it back in again. Those five stages of grief, I was thinking about the five stages of reality. It's on Monday, you've still got people pretending or claiming that what Donald Trump is doing is normal or admirable. You have Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail talking about how Starmer should be more like him. What would that involve after Greenland? Should Keir Starmer invade Andorra to prove to Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail that he's just as ruthless, the word I think he used, as Donald Trump? In the space of 2 days, the pathetic cheerleaders have had their own pants pulled down by the man that they were cheerleading for. It won't change them, of course, any more than it did when they were cheerleading for Boris Johnson, or cheerleading for Brexit, or cheerleading for austerity, or cheerleading for Liz Truss, or cheerleading for all the rest of it. They stake everything they have upon support for something or someone. The thing they're supporting turns out to be absolutely hideous and the polar opposite of all the things that they claimed that it was, and they just carry on cashing their checks and writing their bilge. So in 2.5 days, support for what Donald Trump has done in Venezuela has been completely destroyed by Donald Trump's explicit ambitions to do something similar to Greenland. And that's where we are again this morning. I mean, the headlines are... I mean, they are genuinely chilling. And this is where Don't Look Up kicks in. This is where lots of, this is where don't look up comes in. President Trump wants to acquire Greenland as a national security priority, and the use of military force is always an option, the White House said yesterday. Airstrip one, thank you, not runway one. That's, I mean, even that's brilliant, isn't it? Because it wouldn't be the language, it wouldn't be the Anglo-Saxon language, it would be the Americanization. It would be airstrip one. We wouldn't even get to be runway one, we'd be airstrip one. Please don't ring in about my George Orwell comparisons, because Eleanor has a very, very busy switchboard to marshal. Or she will do in a minute when I actually open up the phone lines. So don't look up. I mean, the temptation to look away, I don't know what we'd talk about instead today, but the temptation to look away from that single sentence, that paragraph, President Trump wants to acquire Greenland as a national security priority, and the use of military force is, quotes, always an option, end quotes. Here it comes. Here comes the kicker. The White House said yesterday. The institution, never mind the building from which JFK, FDR, let's try to think of a president whose initials we don't use, whose name, Bill Clinton, I pick your favourite, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, George W. Bush, Joe Biden, the institution, the administration, the building from which protectors of peace throughout the 20th and 21st century have spoken. Protectors of peace in Europe have spoken is now explicitly and out loud positing the notion of using military force to help itself to European soil. That's it. Full stop. I'm going home. That's it. How on earth do we respond to this reality? How on earth do we respond to this moment? And that is, it seems to me, the only question worth asking at the moment. We've got PMQs later today. It's almost as if that involves rearranging the deck chairs on a potential Titanic. Why are we talking about anything other than the fact that Trump wants to take over part of Europe within 3 years and is prepared to use the military to do it? Wow. Genuinely, wow. What question do I ask you today? What's going on? I mean, there's another element to it that I think is really important. And that is this. The oil in Venezuela is, it's not worthless, but it is nowhere near the bounty of riches that Donald Trump, A, claims it is, and B, quite possibly believes it is. A great piece in The Telegraph today about what it is actually like, what the oil will cost to extract, how much it will be worth when it is extracted, the thickness of it. I'm not obviously a physicist or indeed a geologist. I'm not an expert on oil, but the idea that you just turn up with a hose pipe and a spade and start shipping cash straight out of the ground is just completely wrong. The headline, and this is one of the people on the Telegraph who's not mad, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, writes, Trump's Venezuelan plunder is almost worthless. I really recommend this article. It's extremely strong and very, very heavy on evidence. The hunt for oil is largely pointless. The stuff that's left, although there is loads of it, is the worst possible oil available. Maduro and Chavez and sundry other cronies have stolen everything worth having from that country. And if you were to move the focus to Greenland, as we discovered yesterday from our Icelandic caller Jon, and I've spent a little bit of time digging a little deeper into what he told us, he's absolutely right. The point has now been made elsewhere in the media by people who are paid for their contributions, unlike my callers, who often turn out to have more knowledge and expertise than the kind of people who get paid on other programs for their two penneth. But all of the stuff in Greenland is already available to the United States. All of these minerals, these so-called rare earth resources, is available to the United States. They are a NATO member. They historically have good relations with Denmark. And they are able to apply for the licenses, and they are the home to most of the companies that have the capability to get the stuff out of the ground and into the computers, into the chips, into the technology. So the stuff that he thinks he's getting from Venezuela is close to worthless, and the stuff that he thinks he needs to invade Greenland to get is available without invading Greenland. These are the two most important elements in many ways of where we find ourselves 3 days into this extraordinary chapter in Western history. The president, the most powerful man on the chessboard in the context of the West, possibly the world, is annexing other countries. He's not replacing the regime in Venezuela. You don't replace a regime by installing the deputy and having no elections and being rude about the person who would, by rights, be in charge if democracy were to be imposed, introduced, returned. The rationale, the public rationale, it's even changed, of course, from drugs to oil. No one's mentioned drugs, have they, since Monday morning? It was all about doing down with the drug dealer. And then you realise he pardoned the Honduran equivalent. So you can't really cling to that raft of nonsense for much longer. No one's talking about drugs anymore. Everyone's just talking about oil. But the oil is almost worthless, according to any expert worth talking to. The amount of money that American companies are going to have to invest to get this almost worthless oil out of the ground is absolutely immense. I doubt they fancy it. And then you hop over to Greenland, where the rationale for military engagement and invasion is to get our hands on what they've got. Or at the moment, they're pretending it's about defending us against Russia, as if Donald Trump is fearful of Vladimir Putin, except in the context of kompromat. And he doesn't need to do that either. He can get hold of already a military ally. You don't need to invade your military allies for military reasons. You can stick that on a T-shirt if you want. You do not need to invade military allies for military reasons. Full stop. New paragraph. End of. Press send. So they're doing it for the reasons that everybody is talking about. The rare earth resources, the minerals. And yet anybody who knows anything knows that American companies have almost untrammeled access to those contracts and those rights today, already, without the invasion. So that's going to be the question. Given all the things I've just told you, most of which I'm sure you already knew, every single thing we've been told about the reasons behind annexing Venezuela or invading Greenland are not true. So what is going on? 0345 6060 973. I make no apology to you for reminding you of the foundation stone of George Orwell's 1984. Profit in so many ways. Oceania, East Asia, Eurasia. Three massive powers on the globe in constant, in perpetual war with each other and sustained by a diet of undiluted propaganda. Propaganda that you challenge on pain of death. Why is Trump doing this? Why? I'm not going to take calls, with respect, from people telling me it's to distract from the Epstein files, all right? They just don't pick up the phone to tell me that, all right? And I don't want to sound rude, and we will talk about it. In fact, I'll tell you now what we're going to do with the Epstein files. I'm going to play a game. I'm going to ask you what percentage of the available files that should have been released completely 17 days ago, what percentage of the available Epstein files do you think the Department of Justice in the United States of America has released to date? Should we do a multiple choice? No, I'm taking up too much time. It's 10:22. Given that all of the reasons given for the annexation of Venezuela and the possible invasion of Greenland have already been rendered ridiculous and or wrong, why is Donald Trump doing what he's doing? 0345 6060 973. And I'll tell you after this what percentage of the so-called Epstein files have so far been released.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the biggest Furniture Village sale of the year. Save even more on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. But hurry, early bird offers end this Sunday at Furniture Village, a world-class family business.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Of all the things we've talked about together, all the stories we've discussed together, all the moments that we've marked together, all the things I've announced to you together, which one would most deserve to be on a permanent loop for the entire 3 hours of this programme? Probably, maybe the first lockdown, do you think? I mean, the absolute game-changing nature of that lockdown. But in terms of the world and the tectonic plates shifting beneath our feet, everything we thought to be true and permanent and inviolable being shaky and fragile and broken, I wonder whether it is that single line. President Trump wants to acquire Greenland as a national security priority, and the use of military force is always an option, the White House said yesterday. Not sources close to the White House, not favoured journalists, not people who are seeking the president's ear, not conspiracy theorists, not headbangers on Twitter, not Billy Buncher Numbers with the Union flag avatar, but the actual White House, the building in which Volodymyr Zelensky was ritually humiliated by Donald Trump, who now claims that he needs to invade Greenland because he's so worried about Vladimir Putin. Given that all the reasons given so far for doing what he's currently doing have proved already to be either wrong or ridiculous or both, why do you think he is doing it? Marcus is in Islington. Marcus, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
So I'm half Venezuelan. I was born in Caracas, and but my mum was English, from Yorkshire, and I moved here in the 90s, but I have family in Venezuela. And for the last few decades, I have been, I was there in October, actually.
Right.
While the Armada, the greatest Armada in the history, was amassing in the Caribbean.
Yes.
So I've got first-hand experience, and obviously Saturday morning was horrific. You know, I was shaking, watching the images, just thinking, you know, just at that point, not knowing how it was going to unfold. So
a bit of cautious optimism, though, amid the shaking, though, given the toxicity of Maduro's regime.
Yes, but I never thought in my life that... How many days has it been? 4 days? I'm losing track. It's like 4 days since it happened.
Yeah.
You know, I'm calling people every day there. The challenge now, and if anybody reads history or is vaguely aware of what happens when you remove strong men suddenly, whether it's from the ground up or imposed from the, you know, above, is that they're not monoliths.
Yeah.
So that there are factions within that regime that now this is really revealing. And the concern there, and the palpable concern, even only a few days later, is civil war.
Yeah.
Because the more militarist arm of the regime will fall out with the brother and sister who are running the legislature and the executive now, who are, you know, in contact with Washington.
Yeah.
And the other challenge is that there is treason being spoken about a lot. And there are armed militias that have been armed for the last few decades to, you know, be deployed when there's been any kind of unrest and people need to be kind of basically shut down violently.
Machado has been frozen out, and if you took to the streets of Caracas to say half of the things that you've just said to me, you'd get arrested.
I would get arrested, yeah. And I think, so yeah, so much I could say. But the thing I wanted to say, though, was two things. In terms of your question,
yeah.
I think this was an absolute, in theory, and it turned out to be, in practice, in terms of the military operation, an easy win. So, you know, this has been planned for months and months and months. So one of the big things that people were so concerned when I was there in October, will there be boots on the ground? Will the Americans invade? Will they occupy? Will we see fighting in the street? So obviously, at that point, that was never going to be the plan. The plan was always what happened on Saturday. And therefore, you know, what they've deployed and what they did worked. Imagine if American assets had been destroyed, if 10 American Marines had been killed, if a Maduro had been killed. It would all have been a very different story right now, but it wasn't. So right now, the administration is absolutely high on hubris. the US administration is completely high because they got their man. They've done their whole, you know, demonstration of power. And I think the whole thing was about demonstration of power. My point is, if in God forbid, honestly, God forbid, yes, but imagine in 2 months' time there is civil war in Caracas. Will the Americans come in? Will they put boots on the ground? No, they won't.
It doesn't look as if there was a great deal of thought given to what happens next. And
yeah,
I'm talking about Venezuela in 2026, not talking about Iraq at the time of the Second Gulf War.
If that scenario plays out, which I underline God forbid, right, because Venezuela's got a lot of weapons. It hasn't got the factions of Iraq. But no one can really understand how powerful this regime is, how much control it has, control of everything, I just can't see that the Americans will then, I don't know how they would spin it, but they will play it out. They won't put boots on the ground. They won't commit to that kind of mess. The second thing I wanted to say was I watched the full interview last night from the weekend with CNN with Steve Miller.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I watched the full thing. I didn't listen to the soundbite that you guys played yesterday. Sure. I watched the whole thing. And I thought, right, I get it now. I get it. He's an absolute mad ideologue. and all the Venezuela thing is, to be honest with you, I think, having watched the full press conference on Saturday, it's a cocktail of competing ideologies. You've got Marco Rubio, who's has always had a bone in his mouth,
yeah,
for knocking down Cuba and socialism and communism in the Caribbean and Latin America. Job done. You got Pete, who just wants to kind of, you know, show off American might and power. Job done. You got Miller, who wants to do this, you know, polar hemisphere
to take
power
over the entire hemisphere. Yeah.
And
subjugate non-WASPs, really, to have a sort of white supremacist model in place.
Exactly. And, I also feel a kind of, I don't know, a slight undertone, well, maybe not slight, but undertone of racism in all of this.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
You know, this, you know...
it's colonialism.
I get really frustrated, James, as well, because to be honest with you, it's like... I was listening to some, you know, important Venezuelan commentary last night.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, a lot of bad things have happened in Venezuela over the years. Mm. And the West has never really paid that much attention. 8 million people leave in just over a year and a half.
Boris Johnson was there quite recently I'll triple check the details, but he got paid, I think, $240,000 by a big wig who took him to Venezuela, I think, to meet Maduro. I need to double check that. But the idea that this was an urgent boil that needed lancing was not necessarily something that many Western leaders subscribed to.
So there's a bit of that thing where it's kind of like, you know, it's just stereotype. You know,
so if we had to stick it in a sentence, what I'm hearing from you is that it's a form of publicity stunt from Trump's point of view.
Yeah.
And there's no thought as to what happens next, which is why in the space of 3.5 days, the people who were either compelled or contorted into either pretending or genuinely believing that they admired what he'd done and they supported what he'd done have been rendered completely ridiculous already, which is why he needs to move the spotlight to Greenland.
Yeah, and what power actually the US has over Venezuela in terms of...
that's going to be the crucial test, isn't it?
Because that's going to be the test, and I think there are some mad ideologues in that regime in Venezuela who will want to test that boundary.
Including hatred of America. Hatred of America will be a big factor in some of those sectors, won't it? Some of those factors.
That hatred for America has been there from the beginning for that. You know, it's a kind of prophecy that has come true. The prophecy has come true that the imperialists would come in and try and take over. And I've often tried to kind of be a reasonable voice in that conversation over the last few decades, because my kind of more left-leaning internationalist liberal friends from London will say, oh, well, you know, the Americans want to just take over Venezuela and it's all the Americans' fault. And I say, you know what? It's actually a lot of the responsibility lies with the regime in Venezuela with what's going wrong.
Yeah,
however, the US has been cutting deals with Venezuela up until last year with regards to, you know, bringing people back from the US, Chevron's there. There's lots of stuff going on. So, you know, I just watched that press conference on Saturday and my just I just like my jaw dropped, and I thought, how are you guys going to, you know, run this thing, and what's going to happen if anyone within the Venezuelan regime really wants to test you guys?
And as your jaw dropped, so did a penny. I sense the penny dropped as well. It was certainly while watching the Stephen Miller interview with Jake Tapper on CNN. I sense you needed to unburden some of that, Marcus. I'm happy to have provided you an opportunity to do so. You have made us perilously late for the news, though, so I do have to move on. The question remains, why is he doing this? Why is Trump doing this, given that all the reasons offered up so far by him and his supporters have turned out to be wrong or ridiculous or both? Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Talks between the US and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv are expected to resume in Paris this morning. Yesterday, British and French troops were promised to help defend Ukraine from future attacks if a peace deal with Russia is agreed. The Trump administration has suggested the US military could be deployed to annex Greenland. The US president says that he wants to take over the semi-autonomous region of Denmark on national security grounds. And hundreds of schools are closed for a third day in Scotland, where a yellow warning for snow covers large parts of the country. Aberdeenshire has declared a major incident because of the heavy snowfall. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today. Snow continuing for the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Ratimi likes Pension Bee's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension Bee has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension Bee makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension Bee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
Do you want to stop the river cam without a paddle?
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
There's two questions, isn't there? What has happened and who did it? So what has happened? They've toppled Maduro, a particularly unpleasant character, a particularly unpleasant political figure, even by the standards of drug industry or drug trafficking adjacent despotic regimes. But who did it? Donald Trump. Ah, you mean the guy who actually tried to steal an election? Right. So we're supposed to cheer the guy who tried to steal an election for toppling a guy who stole an election. I don't know how backwards you would have to be to describe that as being morally right, as I think Kemi Badenoch did yesterday. It's morally justified for a bloke who tried to steal an election to use military force and kill 50-odd people in order to get rid of a bloke who did steal an election. All right. I don't know what moral compass you're using to arrive at that conclusion. But, of course, getting rid of Maduro is objectively, quotes, a good thing, end quotes. I think Jeremy Corbyn might be the only public figure who's objected to that simple statement. But that's why the second question is crucial. Who did it? Donald Trump. At which point anybody vaguely sensible, informed or conscious would go, as Marcus just did, I think, in spectacularly articulate form. A very big, so what happens next? Thank goodness the United States don't have a history of wading into foreign countries that perhaps sit atop rather large oil reserves and toppling a regime without having a particularly detailed plan about what on earth is going to happen next. It would be terrible if the United States had a history of doing that sort of thing. So you ask what has happened, and you cautiously answer, a good thing. And then you ask, who did it? And you confidently answer, a bad person. And then you're left with a tension between a bad person has done a good thing. So what do you look at? You look at the record of the bad person to decide whether or not the good thing is going to stay a good thing or turn into a bad thing. And the only way you can begin to get a handle on an answer to that question is by asking the third question, which is, why did he do it? We did it for the oil. Hang on a minute. You literally said on Sunday that you did it for the drugs. Yeah, but we pardoned the other guy in Honduras, so we can't really make that one fly, except for people who are so bent and contorted in their support of the regime because they love the racism that they don't care about the hypocrisy or the obvious dishonesty or the fraudulence. So we've abandoned the drug claim. You know the story yesterday? I don't know if you saw this. Do you know what Cartel de los Soles is? Cartel de Los Soles. That is a slang term for drug corruption in the military. So it's a bit like saying the woke mob, all right? It's a loose umbrella term to describe a bunch of people that you've got a problem with. Obviously, being part of the woke mob is a good thing, and being a corrupt military officer allied with the drug industry is a bad thing. But it's a largely meaningless phrase that was coined in Venezuela to describe a loose and unspecified coalition of army types who had been corrupted by drug corruption. That's the phrase, Cartel de los Soles. What does that phrase mean in the Trump administration? They literally designated it a terrorist organization and claimed that Maduro led it. So you've got a phrase that is effectively slang and simply means, go, all those soldiers who are in the pocket of the drug cartels. It doesn't mean anything more than that. All those dirty soldiers who are in the pockets of the drug cartels. Donald Trump and his administration, either because they're stupid or for some other reason I can't currently conceive of, they designated a Venezuelan slang term for drug corruption as a terrorist organization and claimed that Maduro led it. So what was the first thing that happened in court when Maduro stood before a trial? Yeah, they backed off. The Justice Department backed off the claim that President Maduro had led a drug cartel called Cartel de los Soles, because there is no such thing. That goes back to 2020. And speaking of the Department of Justice, that figure that I teased you with a moment ago, as many of you realise, as many of you already knew, stands at 1%. So while you're not allowed to ring me to tell me that Trump is doing all of this to distract from the Epstein files, you are allowed to remind me that the figure admitted yesterday by the Department of Justice stands currently at less than 1%. The US Department of Justice has released less than 1% of the Epstein files. Less than 1%. 17 days since they were legally required to release all of it, and they've so far handed over less than 1%. So, he also, of course, as a few of you are reminding me, killed 52 people without trial. Innocent people. This isn't a war. Innocent people get killed so you can arrest a drug dealer? How's that going to play out across the rest of the Western world? What if a drug dealer lives in your flat? Are you collateral damage if the authorities decide to arrest him? Absolutely everything is chilling and relatively unchallenging. Except this one question, given that all the reasons given for doing it are either wrong or ridiculous or both, why do you think he's doing it? Andreas is in Calgary, in Canada. Andreas, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say I think his reasons for doing it is legacy. He's a failed businessman who's almost 80 years old, clearly failing in health. And so I think he's trying to make himself look like a war hero. And the people around him are more than happy to use him to push that agenda and see if Europe if the rest of the Western world will actually hold on to international rules, because it doesn't seem like it. So now they're testing the waters. And yeah, I think Greenland's next, or Canada, really.
And there's two engines there. There's the engine that motivates Trump, which is venal and petty and narcissistic.
Ego.
Ego.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's the classic hubris, really, right, in the concept of Aristotelian tragedy. But the second engine, the one that motivates Stephen Miller and, Jared Kushner.
Said it.
Say again?
Your previous caller said it, right? Ideologued. There's a mix of racism in there. There's a mix of wanting their fortress. Maybe it's also problems at home. It's easier to unite people if you can go to a war.
Domestically, things aren't going very well. So historically, when despotic regimes have got troubles at home, they invade or they launch campaigns against foreign countries. Putin, most obviously, and most recently. Talk to me a bit about the racism. This, because I think we underestimate this largely because our media in this country is either far right or far right adjacent and has been for years. But the idea
most of ours is too.
Well, in Canada, really, that surprises me. But
Do your own research when you've got time.
I will.
Look up and see who owns most of our media companies.
Yeah, I will. We like to think of Canada
as right wing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going a little bit further than right wing when it comes to racism in the media in this country, because it's greenlit and actively encouraged across almost all platforms.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
So
look at our Conservative Party.
I will.
Look opposition to our current leader. But yeah, sorry.
So it is a form of thinking. I suppose we see it on Twitter most obviously that these people that there is a sort of form of racial hierarchy, and you shouldn't have Muslim mayors, and you shouldn't have immigrants with equal rights, and that the Stephen Miller ideology is to push that project forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easiest way to divide people too. Visual differences, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
Visual and cultural differences are the easiest way to divide people. And the flip side to that is the easiest way to build a power base is to point out another who you can say is stealing from you or is doing better than you.
And you can usually see it as a protection of inequality or a protection of wealth. But in the context of the Project 2025 and the National Security Statement last year, it's hard to analyze this because it's a feeling, isn't it, rather than a factual. These people feel that they should be ruling their world, that they should be able to do whatever they want. It's why, for example, diversity, equality, and inclusion have become dirty words in their minds, because they hate that idea. It's odd, isn't it, that you have people like Marco Rubio, you have someone of Cuban extraction in the regime, you have Jewish people, you have Donald Trump's son-in-law, because that historically, these ideas go after everybody who's not Aryan, ultimately. And that seems to be where some of these characters are coming from. And they are using Trump to forward their own agendas, the Steve Bannon type agenda.
Also, I you mentioned wealth inequality as well. I think it's really easy for people to forget that they may agree and they may want the power, but they're, like you said, Marco Rubio's Cuban, right? Cuban descent. He's not. He's the enemy, as far as they're concerned.
To them, he is. But they don't see it. Yeah, you don't see it yet. And then you see the sort of low-level pound shop British equivalents, where you have our politicians of Asian extraction claiming that they can't really be English, in the hope of assuaging these sort of beasts of bigotry, which you can never do. Thank you, Andreas. Phone lines are open. Question is simple, but the answer is not. 0345 60 60 973. Why is Trump really doing this stuff? Because it can't possibly be. It literally can't be for the reasons that he claims. And so far, you've got publicity stunt, you've got legacy, you've got the people behind him being embarked upon a sort of white supremacist project where, it's a paraphrase Orwell, Oceania rises from the waves and Europe is left in kind of tatters, United Kingdom reduced to being airstrip one. Any other offers on why this is really happening? Because it can't possibly be happening for the reasons that we're currently being given. It's 10:48.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Whatever you think of Donald Trump, the reality is he is a president who understands power. And economically, militarily, America is in charge of Europe. So when Keir Starmer says, we will defend Denmark's interest in protecting Greenland, what does that really mean? Is Britain prepared to defend Greenland militarily? Absolutely not. Under no circumstances will that happen.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle. Enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing Pretty Muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now.
And save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:51. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There's another element to the legacy argument that Andreas just made, which is even simpler. And it speaks to the two-dimensional way in which Donald Trump operates. Like a kind of six-year-old. I don't know quite what that age is when they develop an ability to stamp their foot hard enough that they can no longer be ignored by their parents. And then a certain type of parent starts dancing to the toddler's tune. The rampaging toddler tantrum becomes the rule by which everybody in the house lives. That's the world. That's the White House. That's the United States of America. But Greenland's just enormous. I don't fully understand. I keep telling you all the things that I'm not. I'm not a geologist, that neither am I a geographer, so I don't really get the Mercator projection, the conformal cylindrical map that Gerardus Mercator, drew in 1569. But it shows you how enormous Greenland is. And if Trump, in his own two-dimensional toddler tantrum kind of way, is looking for legacy, as Andreas suggests, then simply co-opting Greenland. And, you know, at this point, I would say, imagine Greenland with the United States flag superimposed over it. But you don't have to imagine it, because I told you on Monday that Stephen Miller's wife, who recently described Stephen Miller as a sexual matador. That's how weird these people are. A sexual matador who, and I don't want to misquote her, who gets me going every morning with his speeches about how they're going to destroy the left. Okay, these are all perfectly normal people saying perfectly normal things in a perfectly normal world. But if you simply look at that and you see people like Mrs. Miller putting tweets of the Greenland landmass covered in the stars and stripes up on social media, maybe it is just size. That's what I mean by two-dimensional. The United States that Donald Trump would leave behind after invading Greenland or co-opting or annexing Greenland would be measurably bigger than the United States he inherited from Joe Biden. I put that on the list of reasons why he's doing it. And speaking of reminders of Monday's show, I don't want to jinx anything, but yet more proof that we're doing quite a lot right at the minute comes in another newspaper today, on this occasion the Daily Telegraph, where they finally got around to reporting what Fiona Hill said back in 2019 at that impeachment, that congressional hearing into Trump's impeachment. You will remember that she warned of some weird form of swap between Ukraine and Venezuela, and that's what the Russians were asking for, is that if you change your tune, change the US tune on Ukraine, then we won't make much of a fuss if you set your sights on Venezuela. And of course, one of the elements of the Delta Force raid on Venezuela was the failure of the Russian-supplied air defences to provide any meaningful resistance whatsoever. It's gone a little further today with a former US ambassador to Ukraine telling the newspaper that Trump's very clear energetic influence in the Western Hemisphere could lead to an understanding that we get to run things here and they get to run things in their neighbourhood. John Simpson of the BBC described it this morning as backyardism. So why is Trump doing this? Because he wants to treat the Western Hemisphere like his own backyard. Do with it whatever he pleases, or at least the people around him do. And they get Trump to go along with it by promising him baubles, like oil and rare earth minerals and golden telephones. Oh, sorry, that was Batista in The Godfather 2. So why is he doing it? Ali's in Kilburn. Ali, why do you think?
Hi, good morning, James. Hello. I'm still smiling at the thought of Stephen Miller as a sexual matador.
Olé!
I mean, that's a crazy image.
Well, who are we to argue with Mrs. Miller?
And you know, the thing about Stephen Miller is that there was a recent article about him in The Guardian that he models himself on Mussolini. He's a big fan of Mussolini. He even styles his hair to look like Mussolini.
That can't be true. You've made that up.
I read that somewhere.
I don't think we're moving into libelous territory necessarily.
No.
But I think we should probably double check it. The stuff about him being a sexual matador is definitely true. I've seen it with my own eyes. Wow. Not the performance, not the proof, but the claim from the wife. Anyway, back to the question in hand. Why is he doing this, given that the reasons we're being given are so obviously untrue?
Well, one of the authorities on authoritarianism and dictatorship, and if you like, with this administration, the proto-fascism, is Hannah Arendt. I'm sure you're familiar with her.
Yeah, the banality of evil.
Yeah, and the thing is that these types of leaders and rulers, if you like, they like gestures. They like big gestures. And one of them is actually demonstrating force and also gestures like monuments and palaces and things like that.
Yes,
so the two things that have happened in recent times, one is obviously the attack on Venezuela and abduction of Maduro. The other one is the White House that's, you know, he's constructing this thing, this structure, which eventually is going to be actually bigger than the White House itself.
And sticking his name on the Kennedy Center would fit into your thesis, wouldn't it, as well?
Yeah, it's not really my thesis. It's in the literature about authoritarianism.
Take the win.
So, yeah, and I completely agree with your two previous callers. And I'm hoping to sort of complement what they said. Mm. And I think, you know, this kind of ties in with then he can, on the back of this, then he can bully countries around the world. The Iranians are shaking their boots at the moment.
Which,
I'm
again, we won't.
Iranian myself. health.
I say this cautiously to you, but not many people will be losing sleep over the idea of the Iranian regime being frightened or being fearful. But then the question returns, doesn't it? It's not what is happening, it's who is doing it. So if somebody is putting the frighteners on the Iranian regime, most Iranians, certainly most Iranians in this country, would initially be delighted. Then the question of who is doing it and why kicks in, and the delight begins to dilute.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the way Ms. Machado has been treated, somebody who was hailed as the legitimate leader of the country, who has been elbowed out of the way by Trump.
Yeah, and partly we learned because the I guess the first caller today, the Venezuelan caller, was on the money there as well, because it will be partly because the CIA is telling Trump that stability demands the kind of handover that is in place, because the prospect of civil war is real. But then, of course, the Washington Post was told by two people in the White House at the beginning of this week that Trump's real beef with Machado is the fact that she accepted the Nobel Peace Prize that he thought should really have been his. So we're back to that analysis of it being all about baubles. Massive extension to the White House, sticking his name on the Kennedy Center, getting peace prizes. Does he? I wonder now, having killed 53 people in the pursuit of arresting a drug dealer, not as an act of war, not in any meaningful legal sense or viable legal sense. Do we think that Donald Trump will have to give back his FIFA Peace Prize?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, talks between American and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv have entered their second day in Paris. President Zelensky praised a commitment yesterday from the UK and France to deploy troops to Ukraine if a peace deal is agreed with Russia. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to be questioned by MPs about the details at Prime Minister's Questions this lunchtime. Former Labour Defence Secretary Lord Hutton has told LBC it's a significant promise from Sir Keir.
We've got to have the courage of our convictions here. We want to see an end to the fighting. We want to see Ukraine exist as a sovereign, free, independent nation. And we are, I think, doing the right thing in signalling our willingness to support Ukraine in that endeavour. But I think we should be under no illusion just how dangerous such a peacekeeping mission could be. And we've got to make sure our troops have all the material support they need to do their job properly.
European allies are to meet later to discuss a plan on how to respond if the US acts on its threat to take over Greenland. French officials say the matter will be raised at a meeting of foreign ministers. Last night, the Trump administration suggested that the US military could be deployed to take over Greenland. President Trump sees the semi-autonomous Danish territory as a national security priority. A Russian submarine has reportedly been deployed to escort an oil tanker that the US tried to board off Venezuela. Crew of the Bella 1 are said to have changed its name and painted a Russian flag on the side. It's understood that the tanker is currently off the coast of Ireland. America says it's cracking down on a fleet of tankers that transport illegal oil around the world. Learner drivers in England and Wales could have to wait up to 6 months between sitting their theory and practical tests. The proposal is part of the government's new road safety strategy. The plans are subject to a consultation. The Transport Minister, Lillian Greenwood, has told LBC that the aim is to build up road experience of new drivers.
You know, if you start driving in the summer months, we want people to experience driving late at night. We want them to experience driving when it's pouring with rain, because those things do feel different, and it's good to experience those when you're in a supervised, controlled environment rather than experiencing them for the first time when you've passed your test.
And hundreds of schools are closed for a third day in Scotland, where a yellow warning for snow covers large parts of the country. Aberdeenshire has declared a major incident because of the heavy snowfall. A cold health alert has been extended to all regions of England until Sunday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 72 at 10,049. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells, but snow will linger in the north and east of Scotland. And again in the northeast of England, a high today of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC. I'm Dominic Ellis.
Mr. Thing is quite happy with himself. He's just got 20% off home care with British Gas, which covers the plumbing and heating, including unlimited call-outs and repairs. So what we're hearing is the satisfaction of knowing the boiler is sorted through song. If you can call it that, and call it that. So search British Gas Home Care to get 20% off today and keep your shower showering hot. Terms and conditions apply. Ends 3rd of Feb. New to home care customers only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Let me just run something by you. I think if you are familiar with this particular territory, you'll know that it is not fanciful remotely to suggest that in Donald Trump's brain, he appears to have mixed up the concept of asylum, as in asylum seekers, with the concept of asylum, as in what we would once have called lunatic asylums. If you listen to him talk on this subject, he's done it so often that it can't be a coincidence. He seems to believe that people who are seeking asylum are actually seeking an asylum because they have been released from asylums in their home countries. So it's why he doesn't seem able to separate the concept of refugee from the concept of threat, or it's one of the reasons why. The other, of course, is racism. But if you listen to him talk on the subject, it is, I think, worth putting money on the conclusion that he honestly believes that people seeking asylum have been released from asylums. People seeking asylum in one country have been released from asylums in other countries. There are clips. We might find a couple of clips to support this for you, if we've got time. But I just want to set that as background as I return your attention to this so-called Mercator projection, which I'm grateful to Mike in Guildford and others for educating me on a bit. The way it works is because it's cylindrical, let me make sure I get this right. It makes the areas closer to the poles look larger than they actually are. So if you took a globe, right, and made it cylindrical, then the bits near the top and the bottom would look much bigger than they actually are, right? That makes sense. It's like you're stretching bits out at the poles, at the top and the bottom. So countries on the equator will be roughly the same size on the Mercator, well, exactly the same size on the Mercator projection as they are on a proper globe. But countries at the top and the bottom of the map or the projection will be considerably bigger. So much so that, and I've checked this, and I'm not joking, Greenland is about the size of Africa. On a Mercator projection, Greenland is about the size of Africa. So this is 48% in fun, this question, all right? Maybe 52% in fun. I'll let you decide. How likely is it that the man who thinks all asylum seekers in his country have been released from actual asylums in other countries has been shown a Mercator projection by a close colleague, by an aide, and has been shown that Greenland is as big as Africa, and therefore if the United States were to somehow annex it and paint it with the stars and stripes, as Stephen Miller's wife did on social media at the weekend, then the size of the United States of America would dwarf every other land on the planet? Just a question. If the bloke believes, as he appears to, that everybody seeking asylum in one country has been released from an asylum in another country, is it Mercator? Forgive me. I pronounced something else wrong yesterday. Jaya, that first line of the W.B. Yeats poem. It's not Gaia. It's circling and circling in the widening Jaya. Not Gaia, as in gyrate. It makes sense, doesn't it? But the Mercator projection makes Greenland roughly the size of Africa. So someone has said to Donald Trump, hey, Mr. President, look how big Greenland is. We should help ourselves to it. Then a man who thinks in two dimensions could perhaps have been persuaded, that they need to invade it simply because it's so big. if you don't like that analysis, if you don't like that theory, if you don't like that suggestion, what's yours? 0345 60 60 973. I've now been told it's Mercator. This is why I probably should have stayed as a print journalist. Mercator. So not Mercator, not Mercator, but Mercator. Who cares? Who says? Who chairs? Jesper is in Jutland in Denmark, appropriately enough. Jesper, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, hi. It was...
Jesper. Is it Jesper? Jesper or Jesper?
Jesper.
Yes, forgive me. Jesper. It's all about pronunciation today, Jesper. Carry on.
Yes. Anyway, your previous callers, you asked the question about, like, well, what is the deeper reason why he's doing all of this? I think it might be a loyalty test of the U.S. military itself. I don't think the previous perspectives of the callers were wrong necessarily. Sure. I think there's probably a lot of reasons.
But the answer ultimately might be all of the things that we've talked about today could be true.
Absolutely. You know, small man complex and also the specific reasons for it. But the way it seems and the way that they're acting, especially the with Hegseth doing that whole big meeting with all the senior officers, having to come back from active duty places to be lectured by an alcoholic servant of an obese man about how they are not looking healthy enough and how, you know, maybe several of them are DEI hires and there's too much wokeness and all of this.
Madness. So many moments of madness, Jesper, that you remind me of them. You can't keep up, can you? As a normal human being, your brain can't accommodate all of the examples of awfulness and madness.
No, the second I start thinking about it, then the list just comes rattling down. It's like, wait a minute, there was this thing he also did, and this thing he also did. And he said at one point, and here's another, this is another one of the huge lists, you could make it write a book of just these crazy things, like what people already have done. But one of the things was that he said that he would like to have generals like Hitler did.
Yeah.
He's made, I think it was Comey that he was asked, they made like a dramatization of him asking him for complete loyalty. Yeah. I think it was the FBI director, I can't remember. And just the way that...
And loyalty thing, to him, not to the law or to the truth or to
exactly,
the...
Because
but
that
to
was,
him.
Yeah, because they take an oath to the Constitution.
That's
the,
right.
The American military, not the president, not to a man. And I can't help but think that might be the one thing that Trump and his goons still don't know entirely if they can, like, could they actually order the military? Would the military obey an order to go and annex Greenland or do actions that would in some way, you know, whether it's blockading or whether it's just doing some small action there to sort of mark it as we're coming for you or whatever.
Yeah, and you remind me of another moment that we just can't keep up with, or we can't hold all of them in our head at the same time because there are too many. And this goes back, I think, to October, when there was a bizarre interview on CNN when Stephen Miller, I don't know if it was ever established if it was for technological reasons or whether or not it was him suddenly editing himself, but he used the phrase plenary authority. Which would involve Trump having absolute power, total power over the decision to deploy the National Guard in states where the governors didn't want it. It would plenary authority, I think, means just untrammeled dictatorial powers. And Miller said it out loud on CNN and then appeared to just sort of stop himself and stop speaking, almost as if he was trying to swallow the words back down again. And of course, that would depend upon the loyalty that you describe. You know, you can have all the plenary authority in the world, but if the military have got the guts to turn around and say no, then it's worthless. And of course, haven't they just punished a military guy who... I'm going to get the details. The husband of Gabrielle Gifford?
I'll
tell you what, we're proving you can't keep it all in your head at the same time, aren't we, Jesper? But I think they've reduced the pension of that guy who's got like four generations of military service. I'll get the details on that.
And was an astronaut, Mark Kelly. Yeah,
that's the fella, that's the guy. And there's a genuine military hero.
Yes.
And they punish him and they don't because he's not loyal to the lies. He's not loyal to the lies. So... I mean, how does that shake down, though? How does, I mean, what would it be individual troops? Would it be Congress? Somebody says, you're not allowed to do this. You can't do this.
Yes, because if they do as they have done, which is just override Congress, they didn't. I think it was true that they didn't inform anyone.
No, they didn't.
Before or after, really. You know, not until it was way too late and over. So I would think that it would have to be. It is the question of, and they had. I think, I can't remember his rank, but the leader or commander of Southcom,
yes,
stepped down. I think it was shortly after the alleged, but I think we can be pretty sure it was a double tap of the survivors who were shot in the boat and were clinging on to wreckage.
That's right.
People
were
saying.
And again, killed with no proof at all that they were doing anything wrong, just killed on the say-so of
Hexa. The first tap was bad.
Yes.
The second tap, probably not better.
And that's plenary authority. That is simply, we can do whatever we want. And that leads us to the other theory, of course. Well, why are they doing this? Answer, to prove that they can. Which becomes itself a deterrent against dissent and a deterrent against defence and a deterrent against resistance. Just to clarify that other point I made. Yes, but thank you so much. The Pentagon has said it's taking steps to demote the former Navy Captain Mark Kelly, also, of course, a Democratic senator, and reduce his pension because, well, he made a video which Pete Hegseth has decided to describe as seditious. It simply urged members of the military to refuse unlawful orders. So if you, as a Democratic senator, a Navy captain, four-generation military family, if you tell some of your comrades in arms not to obey illegal orders, then in Donald Trump's America, you are a traitor. You are guilty of sedition. And I don't know what laws they invoke to do this, but they're trying to take away elements of his military pension. And Mark Kelly is one of those people who is, cometh the hour, cometh the man. If Pete Hegseth, he wrote, the most unqualified Secretary of Defense in our country's history, thinks he can intimidate me with censure or threats to demote me or prosecute me, he still doesn't get it. How controversial is it to say to soldiers, don't obey illegal orders? Refuse illegal orders. If your commander tells you to kill innocent people, please don't kill innocent people. Who are you going to punish in that scenario? The person telling soldiers not to kill innocent people, or the person telling soldiers to kill innocent people? In Donald Trump's Pentagon, the person telling soldiers not to kill innocent people gets punished, and the person telling soldiers to kill innocent people does not. I wonder what Daily Mail columns we can look forward tomorrow, explaining why Keir Starmer should be more like that. In fact, speaking of support for Trump, is it time? I mean, I'm not short of calls, and I'm still fascinated by your answers to the questions that we're asking. But does anyone want to have a go? Is it simply racism? That Donald Trump is so vile about foreigners, immigrants in general, asylum seekers in particular, refugees, Muslims, Haitians? Is it simply that people who like Trump just love the... Is there anything else going on there? Whether you're writing columns for the Daily Mail or presenting programs on GBBs or describing his decision... Is there anything else? Is there any other reason to like what he is doing in Venezuela or what he plans to do in Greenland? I don't know. Maybe that'll be later in the week. I can't find, to go back to an earlier caller, I can't find anything about Stephen Miller explicitly and deliberately modelling himself on Mussolini, just for the avoidance of doubt. Although plenty of people have made comparisons, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that it is a deliberate modelling on his part. But I have, thank goodness, found the story I alluded to earlier about Boris Johnson being paid £240,000 after a meeting with, you guessed it, the deposed Venezuelan leader in 2024. It was part of some marvellous investigations by the Guardian newspaper and saw Boris Johnson sit down with the Venezuelan leader in 2024 and shortly afterwards trouser a £240,000 payment from the other participant in the meeting, a hedge fund manager called Martin Peterman. I double checking on the dates, paid Last year, 2024, £240,000. Three people at the meeting, or three key players at the meeting, one of whom was Boris Johnson, one of whom was the leader of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, and one of whom paid Boris Johnson £240,000 shortly after the meeting. And, of course, in typical Boris Johnson fashion, he told UK government officials, "It is not true to say that I was paid for any meetings in Venezuela." But he had a meeting, and the other person there paid him £240,000. Make of that could just be a coincidence. Maybe he was skint. It's 11:18.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Oh, wow!
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 20 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Speaking of cometh the hour, cometh the man, in the context of Mark Kelly, the former Navy captain who urged members of the military, the US military, being given illegal orders not to obey them and faces punishment for doing so. Why is Ed Davey in my thoughts this morning? So, Trump is embarked upon an obscene course at the moment, a truly obscene course at the moment, morally obscene, politically obscene, obscene in the context of security, and that is pretty clear. And then UK politicians break down into two or three camps. If you are in power, the argument that you have to keep him sweet is strong. It's not irresistible, but you can see why, with, you know, tariffs on the table and money being rather tight, and the Brexit having rendered us much weaker on the international stage and economically than we would otherwise be. Keir Starmer could easily argue that he has little choice but to keep Donald Trump sweet. Ergo, Yvette Cooper refuses to be drawn on the question of international law in the context of the abduction of Nicolas Maduro and the extrajudicial killing of 50-odd people in Venezuela, most of whom were Cuban, actually. Trump was boasting about that yesterday. And that's the defense that Starmer would offer up. I mean, technically, there's no chance of Donald Trump being president of the United States by the time we have a new prime minister in this country. If the electoral cycles in both countries unspool on schedule, you don't need to worry if you're in opposition about keeping Donald Trump sweet. Unfortunately, we have opposition parties that are almost competing with each other to be furthest away from morality and reality. So you would ordinarily at this time expect one of the opposition parties to be giving Starmer a hard time about not being robust enough with regard to Trump. But is Nigel Farage going to do that? Kemi Badenoch still might. I don't quite know what it would sound like, but Kemi Badenoch isn't bound by the same parameters of common sense that the rest of us are. She can literally say in one breath the polar opposite of what she says in the next breath. So she could say, I think she may already have said, oh, what he's done in Venezuela is morally right, but goodness me, he shouldn't do the same in Greenland, something, something, morally something. So Ed Davey at PMQs later today will be the person most likely to lay out the genuine moral interest that the United Kingdom could and arguably should be pursuing. It will fall to Ed Davey to offer up opposition. Farage probably won't even be there. So, you know, no danger of him saying boo to a Trumpian goose. Badenoch will be interesting. I can't quite see what else they're going to talk about, but I'm constantly surprised by the imagination and contortion of people who allied themselves to Donald Trump very early doors, very early days. And what do they do now? I don't know. Do they just pretend? Do they do it like Brexit? Will we be a month from now looking at commentary that claims there is an excellent Donald Trump, he just goes to a different school? It wasn't wrong of me to big up and praise Donald Trump. What did Jacob Rees-Mogg say about him? He could be the best thing that ever happens to Britain, or the best thing that ever happens to Brexit. They'll never be held to account for any of this. But will it go the way of Brexit? Will Donald Trump still be in the White House, becoming increasingly dictatorial and fascistic, and the people who told you he was going to be brilliant and none of the things that everybody paying attention knew he was going to be, all of those people will just sort of pretend it never happened? I know. It'd be like the opposite of Woodstock. You know, no, it'd be like Brexit. Give it a few years, no one will admit publicly to having voted for Brexit. No one in the UK media or political establishment will admit to having been shilling for Donald Trump. Almost all of them were. You can't separate Trump from Brexit. Almost all of them were. I haven't heard the phrase Trump derangement syndrome yet this year. I'm sure I will. But that was a phrase used by people who couldn't see what was blindingly obvious to everybody with a functioning brain. Donald Trump is disgusting, depraved, politically, morally, whatever you want to call it. And here we are, people who were cool with him boasting about being a sexual predator, people who were cool with him trying to steal an election, people who were cool with him trying to incite an insurrection against his own seat of government. Oh, that's Trump derangement syndrome. How can you care about things like that? How can you care about a bloke who boasts about grabbing women by their genitalia? How can you? Oh, God, these woolly liberals, they're so soft, aren't they? These woke snowflakes who think something's bad about trying to steal elections. Woke snowflakes. Woke snowflakes complaining about Big Don, Big DJT, sending a baying mob of potential murderers to the actual capital, screaming for the blood of his own vice president. Oh, you're such a snowflake. I don't know how much of the anniversary stuff of January the 6th you saw yesterday, but talk about rewriting history. Of course, in the digital age, you can't rewrite history, because the front pages of newspapers that have gone back to weakness and cowardice in the face of Trump's threat are there for time immemorial. The front pages describing an insurrection, describing an incitement, describing the murderous mob whipped up into ever higher levels of hatred by Donald Trump. It's all there in black and white. It's on the record. However hard they try to pretend it never happened, or to insist upon the lie that the election was stolen, all of the people sitting there now, today, January 2026, going, oh, crikey, I didn't see this coming. Greenland, you say? Oh, gosh, he seemed like such a nice person when he was boasting about grabbing women by the genitals, trying to steal election and inciting insurrections against his own colleagues. He seemed so nice when he was doing all those things. I can't believe he's got designs on Greenland. So you could argue, probably should argue, that Starmer can't go where he would want to go in terms of criticism and condemnation. But opposition leaders can. Opposition leaders could. Nigel Farage won't. Kemi Badenoch probably won't. And if she does, she automatically becomes a hypocrite, because she's already praised the actions in Venezuela, even as everything gets measurably and visibly worse for Venezuelans. And then you're left with Ed Davey. So for not the first time ever, but I really can't wait to see what Ed Davey has to say at PMQs today. And we will find out shortly before 12:15. Back to the question of why Trump is doing what he's doing, because spoiler alert, it can't. It simply can't be for the reasons that he is offering. And if you're not spooked enough yet by the state of play on the global stage, try this headline on for size. Let me get it absolutely right. Russia sends Navy to guard oil tanker being pursued by US forces. Russia has deployed Navy vessels to escort an oil tanker also being pursued by US forces across the Atlantic. The ship, which has historically transported Venezuelan crude oil, but is reporting that it is not carrying any at the moment, is currently between, wait for it, yep, Iceland and the British Isles. Go on, pick a side. Nigel? Pick a side. Trump versus Putin, with Britain in the sidelines. Who are you going to back? Which one of your heroes, Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin, would Nigel Farage be backing? No wonder he won't be anywhere to be seen near the House of Commons later today. It's coming up to 11:30. I wasn't expecting to kick in a monologue on the second quarter of the show, but it is a rather different prospect that we face. So I'll come to Becky first in Potter's Bar after the latest news headlines. In the meantime, still time for you to answer these questions. Why is he really doing it? Answers currently include publicity stunts, legacy. I'm going, at the moment, pick a favourite. Should we take text votes on the favourite? I think someone has shown him the Mercator. I'm going to say it right, finally. Someone has shown him the Mercator projection, a map rendered cylindrical, which makes Greenland look as big as Africa. Someone has shown him that, and he's decided, I want that massive place there. What's it called again? Greenland. Why isn't it green? Why isn't it green if it's called green? I said to them, a lot of people want to know, why is it not green? I'm not an impressionist, I grant you. After PMQs, we'll be joined by a former bigwig at Twitter to talk about the disgusting things currently going on that platform. And if you're not across the story, you're not going to believe me when I tell you how disgusting they are. And then something that a lot of you have been calling for, and I have been calling for as well, off air, a Greenland expert, someone who can just tell us, give us a crash course on Greenland. What's it like and who is there and how do they feel about what? So just that is something I think that we need to get in our pencil case before we start doing our homework. In the meantime, here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Talks between America and Ukrainian officials about security guarantees for Kyiv have resumed in Paris this morning. President Zelensky praised a commitment yesterday from the UK and France to deploy troops to Ukraine if a peace deal is agreed with Russia. The Deputy Prime Minister, David Lammy, is to hold talks with the US Vice President after America stepped up its threat to take over Greenland. The Trump administration suggested last night that the US military could be deployed to annex the semi-autonomous Danish territory. And a man in his 30s has died after being hit by a police car in central London. It's understood the marked vehicle was on an emergency call in Borough in the early hours of this morning. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells today, lingering snow showers for the north and east of Scotland and the northeast of England, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big Motoring World, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotopol Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotopol. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotopolguthealth.com/radio.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11 is the time. I thank you for all the kind words coming in about the quality of the radio that we are making together at the moment. I'm as nothing, frankly, without contributors and without your calls. But you do indulge me a little bit in letting me think out loud sometimes. And it's interesting, isn't it, how many of the dogs we've set running have come back round again. So we talked with shock about Fiona Hill's testimony to the 2019 impeachment hearing into Donald Trump, and the way that it explained how Russia had made it clear they saw links between Ukraine and Venezuela, so allowing America a free rein with regard to Venezuela would be the reward for America softening its opposition to Russia's actions in Ukraine. And, you know, if you struggle to make sense of that hideous spectacle in the Oval Office of Donald Trump and his cronies brutalizing, bullying and humiliating Volodymyr Zelensky, a man whose boots no one in that room was fit to lace, least of all the so-called journalists asking him about why he wasn't wearing a suit. If you struggle to make sense of that at the time, arguably the most significant non-life and death matter of last year, then now you know, perhaps. Occam's razor, anybody? Why on earth did they do that? Because the Russians had said that if they change their tone on Ukraine, then they can do what they want in Venezuela, which Russia ostensibly defends and protects. So that has come back round again, and so have the other things that we mentioned on Monday that nobody else was really mentioning at the time. The pardon for the ex-president of Honduras, who was serving 45 years for, wait for it, trafficking cocaine. So lo and behold, they're not really talking about drugs anymore. They're talking about oil. And they're talking about Greenland. They're talking a lot about Greenland. If you were really doing a lap of honour with regard to the abduction of Nicolas Maduro, whose case in New York, by the way, is far from copper-bottomed, but if you were really doing a lap of honour on that, why would you want the conversation to have moved on to Greenland quite so quickly? All of these are variations on the question of why is he doing what he's doing? Because it isn't for the oil. The oil is largely worthless. It isn't for the protection of the West from America, because that's what NATO is for. You don't need to invade NATO allies to enforce NATO ambition or to enforce NATO's mission. And it isn't for the rare earth minerals, the resources that lie beneath the ice across Greenland, because that is up for grabs, as Jon, our Icelandic caller, and others subsequently have explained quite perfectly. It's all there. You just get the rights, get the exploration rights. It's all there for US companies already. He doesn't need to do any of the things that he's doing to achieve the things that he claims he's trying to achieve. So why is he doing them? 11:36 is the time. Becky's in Potter's Bar. Becky, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous.
It's only me.
I know, that's one. before I make my point, actually, I just wanted to also mention when you were talking about Mark Kelly,
yes,
that Trump also called for him to be executed for what he said.
Of course he did.
As well. And I think there was four other Democrats in that video, all of whom he called for their execution.
So the bloke who is telling soldiers not to obey illegal orders should be executed in Donald Trump's. I mean, probably it was rhetoric, it was probably hyperbole, but I think he called for them to be hanged, didn't he? Was that the thing? But anyway, on we go.
Yes, on we go. So the reason I think he's doing this, really, and I'm not as well informed on this as I should be I picked up the phone. But
that's why you're listening to this program. I'm not either, but I usually am. I'm more informed by 1 o'clock than I was at 10 o'clock.
Exactly. I think he's basically trying to line his own pockets and his billionaire buddies. And I was watching last night, it was a video of Jon Stewart, you know, the
yes,
Daily Show in America, his fantastic monologue. And he showed a clip, because, again, I'm not sure, but am I right in assuming that Donald Trump, before he did what he did in Venezuela, was supposed to have informed Congress and informed the leader of the opposition as well, the Democrats? And he didn't do that. But what he did do, and they showed a clip of him on Air Force One talking to the press about it, he informed all the big oil companies before he did what he did. He didn't inform Congress or the Democrats like he was legally supposed to, but the oil companies had the heads up. So this is why I think, I'm sure he'll make a killing out of it.
They've already given him, I think they already gave him $1 billion for his last campaign, the oil companies, and he said at the time that, you know, they were going to get, they would receive good news in return. And the oil, most experts attest, is not very valuable, high density or thick crude oil, whatever the correct word is. But, I mean, it may not be the Venezuelan oil that will provide Trump with the reward. It may just be something else in the gift of the oil companies.
I mean, he's already made a fortune, hasn't he, since taking office?
I think of Jimmy Carter's peanut farm, Becky, more often than he's healthy. Because I know, I really do, because if you want to sort of map the disappearance of normality, if you want to map the surrender of decency, then you look at the amount of money that him and his friends and his family are making as a consequence of, by dint of the presidency. They don't even hide it. You know, it may well have been that previous presidents were less than transparent about how close allies were benefiting financially from some of the decisions being made in the White House, but they had at least, I don't know what you describe it as, the wisdom to hide it. He's literally sending his own son-in-law around the world to do property deals on the government dime. It's extraordinary, truly extraordinary, and yet it isn't. Not remotely. A lot of competition this week for best caller, but I think Michael in Greenwich on Monday was certainly up there, and he joins me again now. I'm going to unmask you, if I may, Michael, because it was suggested to me after your call to the programme on Monday that you were, in fact, Michael Macy, former US diplomat and cultural attaché right across the world. So I'm gonna put that to you before I find out about why you've rung in today.
That's true, though I wouldn't say across the world, but yeah, more than a few places.
More than a few places will do. What is Trump really up to, Michael?
Well, I think, again, people, you got to recognize how narcissistic he is and how much he needs to be seen as the greatest of American presidents. So he's got to overcome everybody's legacy. The first term, he fixated on Andrew Johnson from the 1830s, was one of the most racist, put up his picture in the Oval Office. Now it's William McKinley. William McKinley was famous for expanding the American empire. He took the Philippines, Puerto Rico, and he also was famous for imposing some of the highest tariffs America has ever seen.
So he's got a sort of, I don't know if you have this in the States, Ladybird books are like really simplistic primary school guides to history. He's got a kind of Ladybird books grasp of previous presidents.
Yeah, Andrew Jackson was one of the most violent. Yeah, Andrew Jackson. And he was responsible for the genocide against the indigenous nations, moving them from to west of the Mississippi. It's more detail you need to know, but that's the kind of person. Now it's William McKinley. And again, it's just this very simplistic idea. I need to add more. He wants to be seen as greater than Washington, which is why he's not only building this ballroom, which will be larger than the White House, he wants to put up a memorial arch.
Yes, I thought that was a joke when I first saw it.
No, the victory arch. Well, to put up a victory arch, you need to have a victory.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you commented on his treatment of Zelensky in the Oval Office. This is a man who, again, refused service in Vietnam. One doesn't really want to question his bravery too much. But again, he's going to try to demean anyone who has shown any real courage, which is why I'll go after Mark Kelly. These are people who really have done heroic things and faced great danger. He's never done anything.
So I hadn't thought of that. So we should see, in a sense, Zelensky and Mark Kelly in the same frame, because they both represent the things he knows he isn't.
Yeah.
Of course.
So he has to destroy them. Obviously he wants money. He's making money on all of these deals, or his family is, or people close to him. But underlying all of this is this insatiable need to be seen as the greatest, the best.
By whom, Michael? By whom?
By himself.
That's it, isn't it? That's the bit that's really hard to understand if you are not narcissistic, is that it's your self-image, not how you are treated by the world. That's a side order or a byproduct of that. He's trying to persuade himself that he's the best president ever, and he's never going to be able to do that.
Yeah, you can't do that. Now, he is susceptible to public opinion. That does affect him. But ultimately, I think, which is my opinion, he needs to see himself and be seen as. Mm. And it's so much of it's performative. So people always think, oh, there's a deeper underlying sort of strategic thinking to much of what he does. I'm not sure there is. It's pretty...
No, I don't think there is. It's venal.
Simplistic.
Venal. It's venal and capricious and simple and straightforward. But the people around him are not those things. The people around him do have plans and projects and missions, I think.
Yeah, it's a real mix, and I think you and your other callers have noted there's a difference. You know, they all have their own agendas, and it all feeds in, you know, they're all able to use Trump and his power to accomplish what it is they're trying to do. And again, underlying all of this, though, I think, and you've mentioned it, your callers have mentioned it, is a deep racism.
Yeah.
You know, this is, he needs to obliterate Obama's legacy. Yeah. Obama was seen in the Situation Room watching the takedown of Osama bin Laden. He needs to be seen in the Situation Room taking down Maduro. He has to be better, greater. He's willing, I think, to even sacrifice many Americans' health care just to destroy that element of Obama's legacy.
And again, it almost puts people like us out of business if it's too simple, doesn't it? Because you're not going to get 2,000 words or a diplomatic briefing out of words like venal or greedy or narcissistic. But in him personally, it's Occam's razor territory. It really does boil down to the most base of impulses.
Well, I think that's why people keep misreading him.
Yeah.
Or they want to read more into it than there might be there. And often it's the wrong response because they're not really seeing him as he sees himself.
Exactly that.
Anyway.
There was one thing yesterday, I'm sure you noticed it, when he mentioned, the day before, the prospect of impeachment, saying we've got to win the midterms because if we don't win the midterms, they're going to impeach me. I found that quite interesting.
Well, again, he's afraid of that happening again. It's happened twice. Third time might actually stick. He might actually be convicted in the Senate, depending upon how the midterms go. So the question is, will there be midterms?
Yeah. What's your answer to that question?
I go back and forth. Today, I'm thinking it's probably more likely, since you're beginning to see some dissension among Republicans. Mm. They also want to be reelected.
Yeah.
They also don't want to see the system which has rewarded them destroyed. But it's still an open question. You know, again, you go back to January 6th. He's willing to do whatever it takes to stay in power. And also, there will be a play, I expect, for a third term. Now, I don't think that has much chance of success. But again, too often people have...
Yeah.
You know, underestimated what's possible.
I was going to say, how many times have you thought that in the last 10 years? There's not much chance of that happening. And then it does, doesn't it? But he's flirting with it, isn't he? He's inflating the balloon of a possible. Is there a little something, I think he said, is there maybe a little, I'm not allowed to do it, but is there a little something that maybe, and, you know, that's when alarm bells should start ringing.
Well, it's a weird logic that he has, saying that I actually won the second term, so this is actually my third term. So it's already, the precedent's already established. I'm not sure anybody would buy that. But given this Supreme Court, it's hard to tell what they'll come up with.
Yeah. And you mean that is the question that we're not having yet, or the conversation we're not having yet, because it feels a bit too luxurious about why people go along with it, or what it is that they are in their own minds going along with. Michael, thank you. Brilliant stuff. Really helpful. And not exactly uplifting, but the idea that, well, it's Wednesday, so I reckon the midterms are going to go ahead. Ask me again on Friday, and I might well do.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer signed a declaration of intent alongside French President Emmanuel Macron, committing Britain and France to providing troops on the ground in Ukraine to maintain peace. To General Sir Richard Sheriff, who's former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe and wrote the book War with Russia. Sir Richard, what happens if I'm one of the brave military personnel who's part of this peacekeeping force and I or my colleagues are fired on by Russia?
This statement is pretty light on detail. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace, and enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine.
We could.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Hear that? It's your big McDonald's hunger calling, because the Big Arch is back. And this time, it's here to stay. With juicy beef, cheddar cheese and that Big Arch sauce. Hungry? You are now. Order delivery on the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the Electric Car Grant. Yep, two goals in one, and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the Electric Car Grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Jonathan Ross. And together we host the film and TV review podcast, Real Talk. If you love the big screen and I'm picking everything in between, then this is for you.
Expect honest thoughts and lots of laughs as we discuss everything from new cinema releases to binge-worthy TV series.
Because you do love binging your generation, don't you?
God, we do.
Listen on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle. Enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vomondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply, see lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:51. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I am fascinated by that, but I don't know whether you are. I mean, it's partly because of the world I work in, I think. But people who are still clinging to the carcass of Trump's, whatever you want to call it, decency, the idea that he is anything other than hideous. If you didn't see it during his first term, that's just about forgivable. But when January the 6th happened, I've told you this before. I honestly thought that, how naive is this? I was well into, late 40s. And I honestly thought that all of the people who do what I do for a living, but get everything wrong, would actually for once have to put their hands up. Because you can pretend Brexit wasn't a disaster. You can pretend there's an excellent Brexit. It goes to a different school. They've even started pretending that Liz Truss was a woman. Well, Liz Truss has started pretending that she was a woman more sinned against than sinning. You can pretend, of course you can, that all of the problems, many of the problems that the country is facing now are not traceable directly back to austerity, to Cameron Osborne's ideological mission to take social capital away from the people who had the least actual capital in the country. And, of course, the mothership of wrongness. All of the journalists who told you that Boris Johnson was a genius or that he was a stand-up guy or that he was going to be a great prime minister. So all of those things, I can see how you can cling... You can cling desperately and pathetically to the notion of rightness and continue to pretend or to even believe, to delude yourself into believing that you didn't make an enormous nation-damaging mistake in all four of those cases. But when Trump's mob started baying for the blood of Mike Pence live on national television after he had essentially locked and loaded them and sent them into battle, I honestly thought that that would mark a moment in our sort of in transatlantic history where everybody in this country, whether they were writing columns for the Daily Mail or presenting radio programs, I thought everybody would just have to go, sheesh, sorry about that. Not quite sure what happened. Got a bit caught up in the events. Probably should have spotted it when he started boasting about sexually assaulting women, but that is the deal breaker. And I mean, the depth of strength, the level of my naivety, because I was just confining my thoughts to fans and cheerleaders in the UK media and political orbit. Not Farage, of course, but anybody with a shred, with a single scintilla of integrity, decency, honesty, had to come out of January the 6th saying Trump is absolutely awful. He is all of the things his critics said and worse, and I'm really sorry for arguing otherwise. I honestly thought that would happen. Didn't cross my mind they'd re-elect him. It's just, ah, dear. And they pay me for my insights. It's extraordinary, isn't it? But here we are again in that moment, and I am fascinated by that question. Of how you can sustain support for somebody if it's not just racism. You know, they took down displays honouring black soldiers at World War II cemeteries in the Netherlands last year. You may have missed it. Happened late last year as a direct consequence of Trump policies. Taking down memorials, about 1,700 officially counted as missing. This is according to the American Battle Monuments Commission. But the Dutch cemetery, the Dutch War Cemetery, took down displays showing black US soldiers. But hey, maybe there is nothing more than the racism. Javier, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, is in Deptford. Javier, what would you like to say?
Hi. Hi. Hello. Hi, James. I'm a bit nervous. Huge fun. And
thank you. Don't be nervous. Seriously, you've got all the time and space that you need, I promise.
Well, I'm a Venezuelan living in the UK for the last 50 years. And I've seen all things happening from a much wider perspective.
Of course.
Situation in Venezuela has started long, long before Trump came to power. So we Venezuelans are not naive. We know that we are coins in the political landscape as well inside the U.S. and yes, globally. And our suffering becomes a leverage, you know, in global geopolitics, and whilst ordinary Venezuelans get squeezed in the middle, you know. Mm-hmm. So this situation in Venezuela started a long way, way before we even thought about Trump becoming the president. So Obama, even during Obama administration, he framed Venezuela as a threat, mm-hmm, and imposed sanctions on officials under Chavez and then Maduro, you know, tightening the pressure and cutting diplomatic ties, and, you know, all that happened while Obama was president. And then under Biden, the U.S. kept much of that hardline policy towards Maduro, and while at times exploring limited engagement and trying to get some sort of negotiation under the table with him. Now, obviously, the promises that were made by Maduro didn't materialize. And then Trump came into power. And I think for his political gain and his legacy, he's trying to claim a win where Biden, Obama, and even Bush couldn't get anything done. But we need to remember, I mean, like I was saying, we need to remember that the situation inside the country is really, really hard. And we've been suffering for a long time of of the state repression and political violence and the collapse of our economy, and one of the largest migration crises in the hemisphere. And this was way, way before. Indeed, this started way before the U.S. intervention. So my own father died in 2014, you know, because there were no medicines in the country.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There were no medicines in the country because they basically stole everything.
Everything that wasn't nailed down. I just remembered that PMQs is on the way, which is the only 12 o'clock junction of the week that we can't really ignore. So I'm going to have to nudge you slightly, if I may, Javier, towards the, because I think what you've explained to us is why the euphoria greeted the toppling of Maduro. But I wonder whether, as the dust settles over the removal and the new reality begins to become clear, whether you, as a Venezuelan patriot, feel that you're still a pawn in Donald Trump's game.
Of course. Absolutely. We are not naive. We know but for us, to be 100%, we support what has happened with Maduro.
Of course.
Just to put it blithely and you know, as clear as I can, it's a neighbor that has been beating his wife and children, and nobody has done anything. But someone got rid of him, entered the house, and grabbed him and took him out, and finally that people that has been crying for help feel like there's some hope. We know who he is. We know who Donald Trump is. But whatever happens in Venezuela, it cannot get worse. It absolutely can't get worse.
Oh, well,
thank you for your time.
No, and you know, when I say I hope you're right, I really hope you're right. And I'd be absolutely... no shying away from reporting whatever that reality turns out to be in the coming weeks. I think it has got a little tiny bit worse in the immediate aftermath, but you're talking about a bigger picture than that. Thank you, Javier. I can hear the sadness in your voice. I don't know whether you were euphoric at the weekend, but as the dust settles and the new reality emerges, it is going to be harder and harder to cling, I think, to that, or to feel that initial celebratory joy, albeit, as you say, it is like having a particularly vile piece taken off the chessboard. That's no way to introduce Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, who is here to cast her eye over the first PMQs of the year. Tricky or obvious? Because, I mean, I would say, how can they talk about anything other than Donald Trump? But Can We Better Not does sometimes take me by surprise.
Yeah, he's the elephant in the room, isn't he? Donald Trump really dominating affairs all over the world, really. And obviously, Starmer would love to have started the year talking about the cost of living and all of his things that he thinks that we want to focus on ahead of those really crucial local elections in May, after which many people still think there's a possibility he might face a leadership challenge. But you are right. There could be anything of Kemi Badenoch really to bring up. A couple of ideas. The farming tax U-turn, which we had just before Christmas.
Yeah, that got buried, didn't it? By sort of crackers and Christmas pudding.
Exactly. Everybody was totally across the,
do we know exactly what, I mean, is it gone completely? Has it been watered down?
Yeah, it's been watered down very much. They've changed the thresholds that farmers will have to pay that inheritance tax at. They've raised it from, I think, 1 million to 2.5.
Okay.
So it's a really big climb down. It's not going to affect many family farms anymore at all. Kemi Badenoch's been campaigning on that, so she might mention that. Another thing she might want to then allude to is business rates and the growing labour rebellion around this. The business rates are meant to be reevaluated in a couple of months' time. In April, that will kick in, and that's going to really hit a lot of firms. She's been banging the drum on that one. But of course, Donald Trump, world affairs, Greenland, Venezuela, it's the elephant in the room, isn't it? It's completely dominating all of Keir Starmer's attempts to try to get on the domestic front foot. He's been in Paris, obviously, yesterday talking about Ukraine. We had the announcement of them putting troops on the ground. And Fred Davey, I'm sure he's going to mention Donald Trump, isn't he? He's called him a bully earlier today and keeps pressuring the Prime Minister to do more.
Fred Davey there, but you said Sir Ed Davey.
Sir Ed Davey. Yes. Yeah, I think he's going to obviously push him on why we are still trying so hard to appease this guy, and if we are going to get a peace deal in Ukraine, can we really trust that Donald Trump in America has been saying for so long?
I didn't point that out today. I haven't even got onto Ukraine, but that's why France and the UK have to make the announcement that they've made, is because the role of the United States is no longer the role of the United States. I don't know. Will it be fractious? Or I mean, it used to be at times of international peril, the whole house would sort of come together, but those days seem to be behind us.
Yeah, Kemi Badenoch doesn't tend to lean into that, into party sort of unity aspect, does it? She doesn't really do that, and we did see a lot of that over Ukraine. I think what her strategy might be would be to ask the Prime Minister, well, how are these troops going to go to Ukraine? How many will there be? Where will they go? Sort of the logistics questions that you might sort of expect opposition leaders to sort of press on. But you're right, I imagine she probably won't welcome anything that the Prime Minister is doing. She seems to find that incredibly hard to do so, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, it's footballification, I suppose. If he announced that he was going to beatify Margaret Thatcher, I suspect Kemi Badenoch would find something.
Yeah, she doesn't like agreeing with
complain
him
at all. About.
But he doesn't like agreeing with anything that she does either. So it's to be fair.
True. That's probably true. 3 minutes after 12, and we will cross immediately to the House of Commons as soon as the leader of the opposition, Kemi Badenoch, gets to. In fact, we could do it now. You see, I wasn't joking.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, may I welcome the Prime Minister's efforts to advance peace in Ukraine and his joint statement on Greenland. The last few days have seen significant international events. The US operation in Venezuela, threats towards Greenland, and an agreement to put British troops on the ground in Ukraine. So it is frankly astonishing that the Prime Minister is not making a full statement to Parliament today. No Prime Minister, Labour or Conservative, has failed to make a statement to the House in person after committing to the deployment of British troops. His comments about making a statement in due course, quite frankly, are not good enough. It shows a fundamental lack of respect for all of us here and the people we represent. Mr. Speaker, the US is Britain's closest military ally. However, we are clear that the sovereignty of Greenland is sacrosanct. Yeah. So can the Prime Minister tell us what influence is he bringing to bear with the US administration to ensure that is respected?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, let me be very clear about what was agreed yesterday, because military plans were drawn up some months ago and I've updated the House in relation to that. Yesterday was a political declaration that sits under those military plans. If there were to be deployment, there would have to be a legal instrument. Mr. Speaker, deployment would only be after a ceasefire to support Ukraine's capabilities to conduct deterrent operations and to construct and protect military hubs. Mr. Speaker, there will be a statement to the House at the earliest opportunity. There could hardly be an opportunity. They claim they want to know about this and they're trying to shout me down. Mr. Speaker, in relation to the House, if there were a decision to deploy under the agreement that was signed yesterday, then I would put that matter to this House for a debate beforehand and for a vote on that deployment. That is consistent with recent practice, and I'll adhere to that.
Mr. Speaker, why is today not the earliest opportunity? The truth is, the Prime Minister does not want everybody in this House to be able to ask him questions. So he leaves it just to Prime Minister's questions half an hour. On Monday, at least his Foreign Secretary stood up for 2 hours and 15 minutes. You know, it was a non-event, but at least she did that. He is scared of us being able to ask him questions. Yes. Six questions. Yes, he's here.
Please. I've also requested that we do need an early statement. This House should always be informed first. So I don't like the chantering. Let the questions continue.
Well, one of them asked that he is here. He's got no choice but to be here for Prime Minister's questions. That's why he's here. If he could skip this, we know he would do. But back to the matter at hand, Mr. Speaker. We all agree, all of us here agree, I think most of us here agree, that NATO is the bedrock of our security. The future of Greenland is of fundamental importance to the future of the alliance. And I am sure that the Prime Minister agrees that it is essential for NATO leaders, including and especially the US, to meet. Will the Prime Minister call for an urgent meeting of NATO leaders?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, she says she wants to hear about Ukraine. She's got six questions. She's not even asking a second question about what we did yesterday. She's got the opportunity. Mr. Speaker, in relation...
Sorry, can I help the Prime Minister? You don't need to worry about the responsibility of the questions of the opposition. That's the...
Mr. Speaker, NATO is the single most important and effective military alliance the world has ever seen. In the 18 months we've been in power, I've done everything within my ability to strengthen NATO. We had one of the strongest NATO meetings last year, the summit, where we had more members of NATO and more unity. When I arrived back to the House to make a statement, which of course she asked for, her position was, I shouldn't have missed PMQs, I should have empty-chaired the NATO summit. That's how serious she is about NATO, Mr Speaker.
He didn't answer the question, Mr Speaker. I asked him if he would call for an urgent meeting of NATO leaders. We can all see that the situation is moving rapidly. I also note that he has still not had a call with President Trump. That is concerning 4 days after the events in Venezuela. But yesterday, he announced that Britain and France had signed, he says, a political agreement to put troops on the ground in the event of a peace deal in Ukraine. So given the Prime Minister is not making a statement about that deployment of British troops abroad, one of the most serious decisions a government and a parliament can take, irrespective of what he says, can he at least confirm how many troops would be sent to Ukraine and whether they would be in a combat role?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I was with NATO allies yesterday, all day, in which we were discussing security in Europe, in particularly security guarantees for Ukraine, and we made significant progress. And I'm glad that she has welcomed that. Of course, I will speak to President Trump. I spoke to his senior advisers yesterday. We were with them all day. But Mr Speaker, she asked me about the deployment. We released the statement yesterday. It's clear from that, but I will be clear with the House that there would only be deployment after a ceasefire. It would be to support Ukraine's capabilities, it would be to conduct deterrence operations and to construct and protect military hubs. The number will be determined in accordance with our military plans, which we are drawing up and looking to other members to support. So the number I will put before the House before we were to deploy. But I'll do more than that. If we went as far as a legal instrument to deploy, which would be necessary, I would then have a debate in this House so all members could know exactly what we're doing, make their points of view, and then we would have a vote in this House on the issue, which, to my mind, is the proper procedure in a situation such as this.
Mr Speaker, it is clear that the Prime Minister either does not have the detail or does not want to give us the detail. Yes. But this is important. He should be calling an urgent meeting of NATO leaders. He should have spoken to President Trump by now. This is important because if any such peace deal is breached, we would be in direct conflict with Russia. If the Prime Minister is committing troops, he must give more detail on how he intends to ensure our armed forces are fully resourced. Before the budget, the Prime Minister said it was his ambition to spend 3% on defence in the next Parliament. That could be as late as 2034. It is time to move from ambition to commitment. We have now had the budget. So can the Prime Minister now tell us in what year will the UK spend 3% of GDP on defence?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, just on this serious issue she puts to me in relation to security guarantees and the American role and our dialogue with the Americans, I can assure the House I spoke to President Trump twice over the Christmas period in relation to this specific issue, along with members of the E3, along with European allies. That has been a constant course of our discussion. There's no question of acting on this without full discussion with the Americans, and their senior negotiators were there at President Trump's request yesterday and on his instructions, and they were talking to him during the course of yesterday as we negotiated. So there are, to assure the House, because it is a serious position she's putting to me, on the question of security guarantees, there is nothing between the UK and the US, and we've been constantly discussing this over many, many weeks and months. We've made huge progress. I have personally spoken to President Trump about it on two occasions since we were last in this House. I do want to reassure her and the House in relation to that really important issue. In relation to defence spend, I'm proud that we're investing to keep our country safe. That we have increased the defence spend. That's provided for in the budget. It's the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War. And that means, Mr Speaker, better kit, better housing for our forces and better defence as an engine for growth. Mr Speaker, that does compare to their record. Ben Wallace, who was on the radio this morning, the longest-serving Conservative Defence Secretary, admitted that on their watch the armed services had been, in his words, hollowed out. And our defence...
Ms Carthage, you expect a lot, I expect something back, and that's silent. Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, they shout shame. I'll pass that on to Ben Wallace. Mr Speaker, the defence spending that we've put in place is 3 years earlier than the unfunded plan that they left behind at the last election.
Can they not?
Mr Speaker, I heard what... Oh, wait for it. What Ben Wallace said was that spending had fallen under all governments. 3% the last time spending was at 3% was under a Conservative government. And yes, while we welcome the increase, something that we supported, can I remind the House that this is a man who sat in the shadow cabinet and tried to make Prime Minister, a man who said we shouldn't even be in NATO at all. So I don't need to take any lectures from him. The world is changing. We need to spend more on defence. He did not answer the question about when we would get to 3%. Yet he knows up until 2031 how much he's going to be spending on welfare. He doesn't know. That's in the Red Book. The Red Book has no money allocated for defence. We need to move from ambition to commitment. And Mr Speaker, this is important because this isn't just about money. If the Prime Minister is deploying troops to Ukraine, those troops need to know that we have their backs. Yeah. Last week, seven former SAS commanders warned that Labour's Northern Ireland Troubles Bill will wreck our special forces. Yeah. Not me, that's the SAS. In November, 9 retired 4-star generals warned that his bill was a direct threat to national security. Yeah. And even his own Northern Ireland Veterans Commissioner has said our veterans are being treated worse than terrorists. So, Mr. Speaker, is it not madness to be putting veterans in the dock for serving their country at the same time he is deploying today's soldiers into Ukraine? Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, that was embarrassing. She said that Ben Wallace was talking about all governments. They were in power for 14 years and they hollowed out our armed forces. Copyright Ben Wallace. Secondly, she talks about the shadow cabinet. She has in her shadow cabinet a shadow attorney general who is advising Abramovich at the same time as we are imposing sanctions on Russia and trying to use that money to support Ukraine. How can someone sit in her shadow cabinet advising someone trying to escape sanctions and pretend that their policy is to support us on sanctions? And Mr. Speaker, when it comes to Northern Ireland, they are the party that gave immunity to IRA terrorists. Terrorists who killed British soldiers. Their flawed act was struck down by the courts, which left our veterans with no legal protection whatsoever. We're introducing a fair and transparent process with a package of rights and protections for our about veterans. And, Mr. Speaker, there is no equivalence between our armed forces who fought bravely in Northern Ireland and terrorist groups. And if the Leader of the Opposition wants to go back, if her position is, to their old flawed legislation and give immunity to the IRA, she should stand up now and say so.
Mr. Speaker, let me start by talking about the Shadow Attorney General. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Do they know what the Shadow Attorney General is doing? He is defending veterans pro bono against the actions of this government. On this side of the House, Mr. Speaker, we will defend those who defended us. But why don't we talk about the actual Attorney General who is sitting in Cabinet, the man who defended Gerry Adams, the man who's trying to bring Shamima Begum back into the country, the man who is helping to surrender the Chagos Islands. I will take our Shadow Attorney General every day of the week against his Attorney General. Mr. Speaker, we protect our veterans. I want the Prime Minister to know we protect our veterans. What he is doing to veterans is disgraceful. But this is serious, Mr. Speaker. I don't want the House to be under any illusions. I do not want the House to be under any illusions. The Prime Minister should know that we will absolutely support any efforts to help bring peace to Ukraine. We will work with him to ensure NATO remains the bedrock of our security. But we cannot write a blank check when he is also surrendering the Chagos Islands, surrendering our veterans to lawfare, and surrendering to his backbenchers by prioritizing welfare handouts over defense spending, as if the world has not become more dangerous. So, Mr. Speaker, isn't it time the Prime Minister changed course and for once put the British national interest first?
Mr. Speaker, she talks about the Shadow Attorney General. Of course I accept that lawyers have to represent all sorts of clients. Of course I accept that principle. The question is whether the Shadow Attorney General can sit in the Shadow Cabinet when the party opposite says it supports us on sanctions. We want the money from Chelsea Football Club to go to Ukraine. I'm not sure whether that's her position. If it is her position, presumably it's something they discuss in the Shadow Cabinet, advised by a Shadow Attorney General who is representing the very man whose money we want to send to Ukraine. If she can't see the conflict of interest in that, then she shows no judgment and no leadership at all. It's a new year, but the Leader of the Opposition has got absolutely nothing to offer the country. She is totally irrelevant. Nobody is listening to her. Mr. Speaker, this is the year when on this side we turn a corner, people benefit from the decisions we made, £150 off energy bills, freezing rail fares and lifting 500,000 children out of poverty. We're turning the corner and there's much more to come.
Well, the Prime Minister can keep the good news going because he's rightly made house building and economic growth key priorities for his government. By giving the go-ahead today to the Chesterfield Staveley regeneration route, he'll help us to deliver 1,500 houses and 5,700 jobs on land that was previously coal mining and brownfield industrial land. It's not just a road. It is a growth project. So will the Prime Minister keep the good news coming and tell us that he'll support the Chesterfield Staveley regeneration route?
Yeah. Well, can I thank him for that question? I know that he's working hard on this scheme. As he knows, land investigation works are currently taking place to help establish the final costs. The Road Minister is looking closely at the scheme alongside about 40 others. We will prioritise schemes that deliver faster journeys and unlock new homes and jobs.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed David.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I wish you a Happy New Year and everyone in this House? And can I welcome the progress made on security guarantees for Ukraine yesterday? Mr. Speaker, Geoffrey Robertson KC is a respected authority on international law. He's also the head of the Prime Minister's Barrister Chambers. And he couldn't be clearer. President Trump's actions in Venezuela are illegal. He says the United States, and I quote, is in breach of the United Nations Charter and has committed the crime of aggression which the court at Nuremberg described as the supreme crime. Does the Prime Minister agree with his old mentor, or has he got it wrong?
Well, there's plenty of things that Jeffrey and I have agreed on and disagree with over the years, but let me set out our position. It is our long-standing position that Maduro was not a legitimate president in Venezuela. And so nobody, I think, sheds any tears at his removal. And what we need, what we were saying before the weekend, and we say again, is there needs to be a peaceful transition to democracy in Venezuela. Now, the benchmark of all actions of all countries is, of course, international law, and it is for the US to justify its actions accordingly. My focus is on the defence and security of the United Kingdom, and yesterday we were working with NATO allies, including the US, on security guarantees for Ukraine. And it's only with security guarantees that we'll have a just and lasting peace in Ukraine, which is vitally important for Ukraine, for Europe and for the United Kingdom.
Sir Ed Davey.
Mr Speaker, the Prime Minister just looks ridiculous when he won't tell the truth that Trump has broken international law. But turning to Donald Trump's next target, the Prime Minister was right to give the Danish Prime Minister his backing over Trump's threats to annex Greenland, and I welcome his joint statement with other European leaders. But does he also agree that if Trump does attack Greenland, it will be the end of NATO? And given that frightening possibility, does he accept that the UK needs to increase defence spending more quickly than currently planned and build new alliances with reliable nations?
Mr Speaker, let me be... the Greenland issue is obviously very, very important. I thank him for raising it. The future of Greenland is for Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark, and for Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. And yesterday, people have seen that I put out a statement to that effect, along with fellow allies in Europe. And of course, NATO is hugely important, the single most effective and important military alliance the world has ever known. He keeps encouraging me to sort of tug away at parts of NATO and to choose between Europe and the US. That would be a strategic mistake for our country. And yesterday we were working with our NATO allies, including the US, our NATO ally, on a just and lasting peace in Ukraine. That will not happen without security guarantees from the coalition of the willing, backed by the United States. That's a vitally important issue, and we made progress on that. And there won't be a just and lasting peace in Ukraine without those security guarantees, and not achieving a just and lasting peace in Ukraine is not in our national interest, and that's why I'm applying so much time and energy to seeking to get that outcome.
Prime Minister, even its strongest advocates acknowledge that Northern Ireland...
Good Lord, that was a long one. And as a consequence of the length of PMQs this week, we will dispense with the advert break for now. Headlines on the way at 5:30. Natasha Clark is with me. I don't quite understand what happened there. Was she demanding that he make a statement to the House about what would be, when it finally happened, quite important military detail, but it hasn't happened yet? In the event of a ceasefire, we will deploy troops to Ukraine. Can you tell us exactly what that will mean and involve, even though none of it has actually happened? I genuinely didn't understand what she was going on about, and rather more worryingly, I'm not sure she did.
No, I think that was actually, I don't think it quite worked as a tactic for her to go on today. Obviously, there were questions, and right questions to be asked.
The military spending question was good. I'd have opened with that if that was the road that you were determined to go down.
There were some good questions. I don't feel like she maybe deployed them in the right way. Also, what did she want, Natasha?
Did she want him to provide
detail of how many troops of military, where would they be, what was that look like?
Is that how we normally operate as a country? We tell our potential enemies exactly what we're doing, when and how and why, like months if not years before it actually happens in a theoretical universe?
Totally, and it's obviously a totally hypothetical situation at the moment, because as you point out, we haven't got a peace deal yet in order to do so. But you know, on the other hand, it was something that was announced by the UK and the French government. They are wanting to say we will put boots on the ground. It's fair enough for her to ask what does that actually look like in practice, but it is exceedingly difficult for Keir Starmer to give any answers on something that's not happening. And what he did say, though, which was interesting, was that Parliament will get a vote if and when that does happen. That will be something which obviously previous prime ministers and leaders of parties have really struggled with, holding their parties together on the issue of whether we deploy troops or whether we do military strikes in other countries. That has been something which every prime minister has really struggled with making that case for. And I think
the benefit of a massive majority, perhaps, because you're not vulnerable to rebellion or quibble.
Well,
you
say that.
Well, you do say that. and equally, with a massive Labour majority, it's rarely the Conservatives that are opposed to military action. It's more likely to be the other way around.
Yes, but it will probably, if and when it happens, expose some splits within the Labour Party, which is completely... We're getting completely used to it now, aren't we? Those splits in the Labour Party, despite Keir Starmer having such a strong majority. It's clear there are lots of different wings in that Labour Party which are starting to emerge. So it's a bit of a risky strategy, but I think for Keir Starmer, he will probably think there is no option but to hold such a vote to get the mandate for that military action if indeed it happens.
And then again, on the issue of whether or not she actually understands what's going on, even the words that are coming out of her own mouth, for the shadow attorney general to be acting for a sanctioned Russian oligarch as the UK government, the UK state pursues money from him that would they want to redirect towards the Ukrainian war effort, and sitting in the shadow cabinet. I mean, you could tell sometimes from Keir Starmer's tone when he goes full DPP, and it's an absolute no-brainer. This is completely indefensible. Bill Browder, very strong on this subject over the Christmas period, the least partisan man I know, because his mission in life is, of course, simply to achieve justice for his lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, who was essentially killed by Putin's cronies, and he will break bread with anybody in pursuit of that. But for the shadow attorney general to sit in shadow cabinet and act for a sanctioned Russian oligarch, even if it is Roman Abramovich, who, of course, many Londoners still feel fondness for, is unbelievable.
Yeah,
and
totally.
She genuinely doesn't seem to understand that.
No, she swerved that one by hitting it right back to the Tories' favourite topic of talking about Lord Hermer, the current Shadow Attorney General, and talking about the cases that he defends. So it was actually
when
quite hard.
When he wasn't Attorney General.
Absolutely true.
It was kind of crucial, that
true.
Point.
And exactly. And the question that Keir Starmer asked was, is it, you know, conceptual that you should be able to stand within the Shadow Cabinet at the same time as you are doing this?
Yeah.
And you're totally right. I think many people will say, absolutely not. Those are two interests that do not go together, just as the interests of, you know, representing Shamima Begum and Gerry Adams potentially didn't go against the interests of Lord Hammer as well. But you are right, he wasn't in the government at that time. So a really difficult one for them. But what
do you think
clear,
she understood that? Do you think she understood that? I mean, the fact that she's talking about jobs that Helmer did before he was Attorney General suggests she's completely missed this rather important and enormous point about the difference between what you can do when you're a member of a government or a shadow cabinet and what you can do when you're not.
Or as Keir Starmer says, is she just irrelevant and no one's listening to her? And she's, totally irrelevant. No one's listening to her. Basically a pointless party. Can you have it both? Is Keir Starmer able to make that argument that the Tories are totally irrelevant, but also that you should be behaving like a government?
Well, he could say, I've got no choice but to talk to her, but I'd rather. And then, as if any proof were needed, that wasn't the finest performance we've ever seen from Kemi Badenoch. If in case of emergency, break the Jeremy Corbyn glass, and she did.
Yes, that was, she was talking about, he sat and tried to make him Prime Minister. She loves rolling out that line, doesn't she? There were some good questions from Kemi Badenoch there, but I think her delivery was poor, and I didn't think that she did them in the right answer. The right order. When she was saying, we will support you in what you want to do in Ukraine, that was the sort of collegiate party politics working together that we might have expected under previous governments, right? And if she'd said that at the top, I think Keir Starmer would have reacted in a much better tone. But instead, she went in for the attack from the very word go, and it didn't quite work.
Nadia puts it well. On international issues, when in opposition, Starmer always made Britain look united by backing the government. Does Badenoch think Keir doesn't recognise the importance of NATO?
Of course he does.
She's sniping about things that aren't hers to know in opposition. And if Nadia and Hastings can work that out, you have to wonder why the leader of His Majesty's opposition apparently struggles to do so.
There are some questions, should he have spoken to Trump by now about Venezuela? It is fair to say that in the last 4 days, he's only managed to speak to an advisor of President Trump, as he just said. Not a great look. I don't know which world leaders President Trump has spoken to in comparison. Some of those questions about defence spending, as you said, were good. You know, when will the UK spend 3% on defence? But I thought that the way Ed Davey said it was much better.
Yeah.
We need to increase our defence spending now, and should we not be working to speed that up in light of what America has done in Venezuela? I thought his way of arguing it was much, much better and much stronger.
I wonder whether the difference was that Ed Davey sounded like he really was concerned about the military spending and the military, whereas Kemi Badenoch sounded like she was concerned about scoring points off Keir Starmer.
Yes.
Just in terms of tone and style, I don't know. And Ed Davey also probably being a little bit disingenuous, because he knows that the Prime Minister at this point can't really publicly accuse the President of the United States of having broken international law.
Of course
not. But he is perfectly entitled to ask the question. That's it. We're very late. Here is the news with Amelia Cox.
The Prime Minister insists MPs will vote on plans to send troops to Ukraine in the event of a peace deal with Russia. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has accused Sir Keir Starmer of avoiding scrutiny by not calling an immediate debate in the House. A Russian submarine has reportedly been deployed to escort an oil tanker the US tried to board off Venezuela. It's understood the crew of Bella One, which is now off the coast of Ireland, has changed its name and has painted a Russian flag on the side. And a man has died in central London after being hit by a marked police car responding to an emergency call. The man in his 30s was hit in Borough in the early hours of this morning. LBC weather, mostly dry this afternoon with a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, lingering snow in northern and eastern Scotland, cloudy and damp in the southwest and later in Northern Ireland, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vomondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply, see lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 26.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:35 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The bane of my life, I mean, it doesn't really apply yet this week because international news is so important and so arresting, and also, as we've discovered, so fertile when it comes to our conversations. But the bane of my professional life involves stories that I find absolutely fascinating, but I can't for the life of me work out how we could possibly have a phone in about them, how we could have a conversation together about them, because they're too complex, or they are too one-sided, or they are just too weird, too out there to properly make sense of. So the first thing we have to do, of course, is begin to make sense of them. X, as Twitter is now known, is, and there's no easy way of phrasing this, allowing users to digitally undress children.
and then use the resulting images, which are, I think, the only word I can think of to use, incredibly realistic, to potentially harass and abuse those children. It can also and is also happening to adults. And, well, that's it. That's the background to the story. That's why I'm joined now by Eddie Perez, who's a former director at Twitter until shortly before Elon Musk took over, where he worked on as a director of a product team dealing with social issues such as elections, public health and violent extremism. He's now on the board of directors at the OSET Institute, working to support public confidence in elections. And I'm afraid, Eddie, I'm going to have to drag you down to my level when it comes to understanding and knowledge, and begin by asking you how this happens.
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me, James. And I'm glad you're reporting on this important topic. The most immediate way to describe why we are now hearing these very, very troubling stories about how XAI and X's AI chatbot, Grok, is allowing these non-consensual sexualized images. A lot of it is stemming particularly from a recent release of Grok. And I think one of the most important things that has happened, this was as recent as late December, is that now, because of new features, Grok will allow any user with a prompt to tag Grok and to modify someone else's photo, including public figures, celebrities, influencers, private people. Any photo that's out there, somebody has the ability. Now, when we talk about entering a prompt, just imagine having a little window on your computer, and it's as if you are giving commands to this little AI engine. So I might be looking at a photograph of a particular individual, and all that a user would have to do is, after tagging the chatbot, is say, "I'd like you to remove the blouse on this person."
Wow.
Or even worse, they could say something like, and you can do this successively. Maybe, and in fact, recently there was a very, very troubling series. It was a video where somebody could see scrolling in real time someone's efforts to sexualize, to degrade, and to humiliate a woman of great power. It's the deputy prime minister of Sweden. And so, for example, imagine looking at a photo and saying, "Remove the blouse. Now dress this person in lingerie. Now pose this person in this particular way." You get the idea, and I don't want to be too salacious about
it.
And then, of course, once those images have been generated, they are available to be publicly posted on the X platform, which, of course, can cause them to spread tremendously.
How easy would it be, in the context of X? I appreciate the images that have already been established are there now. That's a done deal, and there's a conversation to be had about what legislation could be used to suppress them. How easy would it be to undo the technology that has facilitated this behavior?
It would be as straightforward as Elon Musk and his engineers making the decision that we are no longer going to provide access to the Grok chatbot for as long as it's going to take for us to assess the risks here. I mean, if you think about any technology platform that on any given day is going to choose to roll out a product, well, precisely the reverse can happen. We are going to temporarily or permanently shut this down, the end. And in a normal world, someone like Elon Musk and a company as important as X with global reach would recognize this for the scandal and the crisis that it is, and they would say, "We are deeply, deeply concerned. We are going to stop users from being able to use X. We're deeply sorry that these outputs have been possible, and then you need to go back to the drawing board and demonstrate a real commitment to deploying such a thing safely."
What has actually happened?
Well, sadly, Elon Musk has been quite dismissive about the whole issue. I think that overall, notwithstanding a tremendous international backlash across Europe, India, many other countries, notwithstanding all of that, the main thrust of Elon Musk's response has been to treat it all as if it's a big joke. He has responded to criticisms of all of this with little emojis of people laughing. He has made fun of it by posing a picture of himself in a bikini and saying things like, this chatbot can put anything in a bikini. Suffice to say, it has not demonstrated a seriousness of purpose or a level of responsibility that's appropriate for what's going on here. There was one very, very half-hearted post that he made in response to somebody else where he, the gist of his message was to say, anybody who uses Grok to post illegal content will be subject to the consequences of posting illegal content. But that's it. Pretty tepid overall, I would say.
I guess. I'm sure everyone listening would agree. And then we come to the question of our age, really, which is in the absence of any, what would you describe it as, autonomous decision to do what is right or legal or correct, what pressure can be brought to bear upon Musk in person or X in particular to do what you have described as being very, very easy to do? He's not going to do it out of conscience or out of the goodness of his heart or out of any sense of decency or integrity or protection of women, protection of humans. So what is there anything, because I could ask this about some of the freedom of speech issues on there and some of the lies and other deep fakes and propaganda.
Sure.
Is there anything that could force his hand?
Well, as somebody, and I'll mention James, before I got into this, my background was in political science, and I'm always going to be the sort of person that's going to say, I believe there's always something that can be done.
Yes.
We always have to have some agency. We can't throw up our hands and say, boy, it's too bad the richest, most powerful man in the world is doing awful things. And to that end, we are gladly seeing, and what I think both the UK and the European Union are demonstrating leadership on, is to raise very strong, very unequivocal condemnations and public pronouncements of this, and specifically to make it clear to Mr. Musk that these sovereign nations and the EU are going to look at the framework of their legal regulations to bring whatever sanctions are going to be appropriate and possible for illegal activity, whether it's the Online Safety Act in the UK,
yeah,
the Digital Services Act in the European Union. It is, you know, this is a classic situation where you can say glass half full, glass half empty. And I should say, I am not an attorney. There are plenty of people that are far, far more knowledgeable about technology law and so forth. However, I think it can still be said that it's troubling that there are as many gray areas currently as there are, not simply in terms of the DSA or the Online Safety Act or in the United States, the Take It Down Act. It can't be denied that both the way that the laws are written, and yes, most importantly, it's going to take political will and risk-taking and authority to hold somebody as powerful as Elon Musk to account. But that is currently what's going on, and those are the legal frameworks that will be looked at.
And of course, you mentioned Musk's unprecedented wealth, because of course it means, and his personal relationship with the company, which means that it's hard to imagine financial sanction making much of a dent in his, well, the combination of wealth and ego. It's hard
Correct.
To imagine financial penalties making much of a dent in him. So you're looking at the possibility. It's that age-old, the greyest area of all, is whether or not these platforms should be treated as publishers in the traditional sense, and therefore be
Correct.
Responsible legally, not morally, but legally, for every single thing that is published on those platforms. On a personal level, Eddie, what do you think Musk is up to in allowing this to happen and responding to it so childishly?
You know, I don't mean to sound glib about what I'm
sure.
going to say, James, but I've been an observer of Musk for many years. Needless to say, I took great interest from the moment that he made his successful bid for Twitter when I was still there. I left from a principled standpoint. I did not have confidence in the sort of company he was going to run, and I wouldn't want to be part of it.
I bet you're feeling pretty stupid now, Eddie, aren't you, eh?
I have quite seriously always thought, it frankly surprises me how much Musk, at his age, truly does appear to be driven by a lot of impulses that I can only characterize as a desire to be a chaos agent,
yeah,
a provocateur, to be the center of attention. And I don't say this lightly. There is a tremendous amount of, frankly, rather immature kind of male psychology going on here. And so other people might give very different answers, but I would sum it up by saying what I think Elon Musk is doing here is he is enjoying being in a position of power where he's getting a lot of attention and reinforcing the very, very troubling values that he seems to be doing on multiple fronts. And what I mean by that is when we look at what Elon Musk does with his platform and when we talk about so-called issues of so-called free speech, usually what he's doing is punching down.
Yeah.
He's punching down on those people and segments of society that actually have less power, whether it's due to race or whether it's Jewish history or in this case, women. And I'll say, and then I'll pause. I do think that this particular episode is especially troubling, and I don't think we can talk about it without pointing out that this is what is being shrugged off and what is being treated as a big joke is a really, really systemic form of misogyny that's happening on a very large scale. This is 50% of the, at least of the population of the planet, that the most powerful man in the world is happily allowing his technology to sexualize and to degrade and to humiliate. And that needs to be part of the conversation. Why would this even in some circles be laughed off as if this is just boys being boys?
That's very, very helpfully put. Thank you. Well, speaking only for myself, I don't know about anybody else listening, but I'm a lot clearer now on what is going on and just how profound this is. What we don't have in conclusion is much idea of what will happen next. But as you say, it's going to involve concerted and unified action by lawmakers, by government.
It is. And the one thing I'll note quickly, James, that also is a piece of the puzzle, and again, very worrisome. You know, I noted earlier how strong the international backlash is, everything that UK, EU, and others are doing. One country that in terms of the government has been largely conspicuously silent on all of this is the United States of America. And frankly, the U.S. is engaged in you know, transatlantic sort of push and pull on these issues of technology.
Well, Eddie Paris, thank you, former director at Twitter, now on the board of directors at the OSET Institute, working to support public confidence in elections, making the point, of course, that one of the only leaders you might expect to have spoken about this and to have condemned this is the leader who has routinely and infamously boasted, of course, about grabbing women by the .. It's 12:49.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Off Scotland, a Russian sub escorts an oil tanker the US is also pursuing. Meanwhile, Greenland waits and Keir Starmer reasserts its independence at Prime Minister's questions. But where is it all taking us?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Oh, made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel, and everyday transport. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 12:52 and we continue our idiot's guide to important matters, moving from, well, the filth that is currently populating Twitter, or X as it's now known, on to Greenland. And just for the avoidance of doubt, I'm the idiot. And Patrick Schroeder is the person who's going to provide the idiot's guide. He's the senior research fellow at the Chatham House Environment and Society Centre. And probably too modest to describe himself as such, but I will describe him as a Greenland expert. I mean, I'm tempted just to say, Patrick, what's going on? But that might be a little bit too broad an opening question.
Yeah, hi, James. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's a good question. There's lots to talk about. I've had the chance to visit Greenland last year in November. That was my first time to be in Nuuk, the capital city, which is a small place. It's a town, really, about 20,000 people. Overall, Greenland has a population of only 58,000. And I was mostly interested in Greenland because of my work on climate and environment, because the impacts of climate change on Greenland are quite significant. So one of the things people mentioned, how warm it was for the time of the year. Oh. So it's warm past. But then during the conference that I attended, there was also a lot of discussion around the politics, which we now also see in the news, and the relationship between Greenland and Europe, etc.
Is it possible to speak of Greenland public opinion? I'm always wary of public opinion because it's always fractured and often sometimes polarised. But is there a sort of Greenlandish attitude to Donald Trump's posturing, Donald Trump's ambitions?
I think it's fair to say that the majority of Greenlanders basically say we're not for sale. They not very keen to hear the news coming from the US and the claims. The government is feeling a lot of pressure, and actually one of the more general sentiments around Greenland is actually that Greenland people have a strong national identity and they want to be an independent country. So at the moment, Greenland is part of Denmark. In a way that gives Greenland some autonomy. So there's a parliament, there's a government that's elected. The government has basically the say over most domestic policies, but issues related to foreign policy, diplomacy, international affairs, all of that sits with Denmark.
They'd be very, very wealthy if they were independent, if these critical minerals, and I know this is particularly in your purview, are as valuable as everybody keeps claiming and keeps explaining. Just tell us what they are, why they are so valuable, and whether or not Donald Trump does need to invoke any form of annexation or invasion in order to enable American companies to exploit the resources.
Yes, there are minerals and in Greenland, especially in the southern part of Greenland. At the moment, there's not actually that much mining going on. So there's some gold mining, but there are some deposits of rare earth elements. So these are not actually rare. Okay. But at the moment, those rare earth elements, the supply chains are dominated by China, which has created a lot of the geopolitical issues around it. There were the exports controls last year. Greenland depends a lot economically on Denmark at the moment. About half of the annual budget is provided by Denmark. That's about £450 million. And so there's actually, Greenlanders are keen to tap that mineral wealth. But in order to do that, there needs to be investments. And so that's where Greenland is also in discussion with various companies. We actually, in our event, we had the mayor of South Greenland on our panel, and she was negotiating with three mining companies about the extraction rights. So that's already happening. So there's actually no need for annexing Greenland, because you could have kind of like business deals.
With American companies. I mean, simple economies of scale and experience would suggest that American companies would be at the front of any queue for exploration rights and mining rights anyway.
Yeah, I think they're discussing with U.S. companies. So there's one company that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. They quite advanced in these discussions. The minerals is one part, but just over the last few days, the geopolitical aspect has come in. So Trump was saying we need it for security, because Greenland's situated between the U.S. and Russia. If there were nuclear missiles, they would probably fly over Greenland. But again, that is not necessarily a reason why Greenland needs to be annexed, because during the Cold War, the U.S. already had military present in Greenland.
That's 6,000 troops on the ground. If only there was some sort of, I can't think of what we might call it, like a sort of North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That might be quite helpful in this kind of circumstance.
That could be helpful, yeah. I think that organization does exist. I think, they need to get their act together to find a solution.
The average Greenlander will be worried about this, or thinking that it's being, we're poor. The conversation is about us, but without us, as we often hear about the Baltic states in the context of Russian aggression. Would the average Greenlander feel part of the conversation, or that they're being discussed above their own heads?
Yeah, I think mostly above their own heads, and that's generally the sentiment, that they want to have more say in the future of their country. So it's like the long term plan is to become independent, and I don't see from my discussions or conversations I had that Greenland wants to swap dependency towards the US, to change from not being part of the Kingdom of Denmark towards becoming, I don't know, the 53rd state of the US or something like that. No. I don't think that's a viable scenario.
Not unless it happens against their will. Thank you, Patrick. That was perfect. Patrick Schroeder, the Senior Research Fellow at the Chatham House Environment and Society Centre, bringing us up to speed. All of those who have been furiously Googling Greenland over the course of the last few days will have benefited from Patrick's insights. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits of this show every day. And there have been a heck of a lot of best bits over the course of the last 3 days. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC if he's not in the pub. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed, James. At 3 yesterday we spoke, didn't we, about road safety rules coming in. We discussed age. Today the focus is on drink driving. We'll hear from a mother whose daughter was killed by a drink driver. But events off the coast of Scotland, essentially between Scotland and Iceland, are going to dominate the first hour of the programme. At least we'll get on to Ukraine and that commitment to Ukraine in the second. Reuters are reporting that the US and possibly UK forces, but certainly US forces, have boarded an oil tanker off Scotland that was being protected essentially by a Russian submarine. Meanwhile, Greenland waits, and Keir Starmer has reasserted his commitment to its independence without mentioning Donald Trump once. Where's it all taking us?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, it's understood the US is attempting to seize an oil tanker which broke away from a naval blockade off the coast of Venezuela. Crew of the Bella One are said to have changed its name and painted a Russian flag on the side. The vessel's last known position was west of the UK, travelling northwards towards Iceland. The Ministry of Defence is refusing to comment. We'll bring you more as we get it. The Prime Minister has been facing questions over plans to send troops to Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire. Keir Starmer signed a declaration of intent following a meeting in Paris yesterday. He insists MPs will have a say, but Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has accused him of disrespecting the House.
Were troops to be deployed under the declaration signed, I would put that matter to the House for a vote.
Which is frankly astonishing. That the Prime Minister is not making a full statement to Parliament today.
A man has died in central London after being hit by a police car this morning. LBC's Helen Hoddenott has more on the collision in Borough.
The Met has released a statement saying that just after 12:30 last night, a marked police vehicle was on an emergency call when it was involved in a collision with a pedestrian on Borough High Street in South London, which is a busy road lined with shops and restaurants. We're told the pedestrian, a man in his 30s, was given emergency first aid by officers before being treated by paramedics, but the man died at the scene. His next of kin have been informed and are being supported by specialist officers, and the Met has informed the Force's Directorate of Professional Standards and also referred itself to the police watchdog, the IOPC, which has begun an independent investigation.
A number of school children have escaped unhurt after a bus slipped off the road on black ice and crashed into a ditch in Kent. Emergency services, including three fire engines, were called just after 8 a.m. after the vehicle left the road in Ashford. And hundreds of schools are closed for a third day in Scotland, where a yellow warning for snow covers large parts of the country. Aberdeenshire has declared a major incident because of the heavy snowfall. A cold health alert has been extended to all regions of England until Sunday. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 66 points at 10,056. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather mostly dry this afternoon with a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, lingering snow in northern and eastern Scotland, cloudy and damp in the southwest, and later in Northern Ireland, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Time's running out on your old assumptions, Brian.
But Argos is just for toys, right?
Wrong.
Sean Corny.
This Samsung Galaxy Watch tracks steps, sleep and heart rate.
Yours is through the roof, Brian. There is more to Argos.
Get the latest tech and more on the Argos app today. Subject to availability in selected stores and argos.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Very dramatic scenes unfolding in the last 20 minutes or so off the coast of Scotland, significantly off the coast of Scotland, but still RAF reconnaissance jets from Lossiemouth base have flown off in support of US air forces as well, all connected to an oil tanker, a previously Venezuela-linked oil tanker, which is being protected by Russia, which now regards the tanker as its own boat, it seems. And Reuters are reporting that the US is now attempting to board, or has succeeded in boarding, that oil tanker. Not clear yet whether UK forces have been involved in any boarding of the tanker, but they're clearly involved in support of the US in all of this. So this is getting very complex indeed. That connection to events in Venezuela, not just the ones of the weekend, but to the whole row over oil and sanctions on tankers and the like. And now Putin's involvement as well. Stay with LBC throughout the afternoon for developments on this. You'll find information and pictures as well. There are lots of pictures involved online on the LBC app as well and the website. Let's talk to Joseph Draper, LBC's reporter, who's been keeping a close eye on these events.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a huge amount of mystery and drama surrounding this. It's effectively an aging, rusting oil tanker. We think it's empty. It's been making its way across the Atlantic from the Caribbean, as you say, currently off the coast of Scotland and Iceland. It's called the Marinera, formerly called the Bella One, thought to have been travelling previously under a false flag. As you say, it now has a Russian flag. Last month, the US Coast Guard attempted to board this vessel off the Venezuelan coast over suspicions it was carrying sanctioned Iranian oil. It then abruptly changed course.
And headed to Europe.
Yes, exactly. Headed to Europe, hoping to get to Russia, essentially, via, as I say, Scotland and Iceland. It reflagged to a Russian ship. Since then, it's been pursued by the US military. Donald Trump, of course, ordered that blockade of sanctioned oil tankers entering and leaving Venezuela in December. Worryingly, though, Sheila, Russia also deployed its own naval assets, they say, to protect this ship after what they call an unwarranted response from America, from NATO. It includes surface vessels, submarines, we think. And as you say, in the last half an hour or so, photographs from Russia today showing what appears to be a US Little Bird helicopter actually attempting to board this ship. Reuters as well now reporting the US is attempting to board it. And there is clear UK cooperation on this. Whether they're actually involved in boarding it is up for debate. We have reached out to the Ministry of Defence. They're yet to comment on this. Flight tracking data, which we've seen this morning, shows US Poseidon surveillance aircraft operating from RAF Lossiemouth, so in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And also, as I say, in the last half an hour or so, UK surveillance aircraft heading from that base towards this tanker as well. And I think, I mean, the question here for the Prime Minister, for the government, is whether really it's appropriate for the UK to be supporting the US in operations which are clearly linked to Venezuela, when, as we've heard over the last few days, Sheila, President Trump is threatening to take Greenland by force as well. Of course, that is a NATO ally. Experts warning that would effectively destroy the NATO alliance. So there are questions here, I think, Sheila, about whether by implicitly supporting this US operation just off our shores, are we encouraging them then to pursue other territorial ambitions as well? And this has all been happening in the last hour as the Prime Minister took questions in the Commons, fiery exchanges, as we heard, with Kemi Badenoch, leader of the opposition, Sir Ed Davey from the Liberal Democrats as well, about whether he's being robust enough with President Trump.
The future of Greenland is for Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark, and for Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. And yesterday, people have seen that I put out a statement to that effect, along with fellow allies in Europe. And of course, NATO is hugely important, the single most effective and important military alliance the world has ever known. He keeps encouraging me to sort of tug away at parts of NATO and to choose between Europe and the US. That would be a strategic mistake for our country. And yes, yesterday we were working with our NATO allies, including the US, our NATO ally, on a just and lasting peace.